And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Good evening and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today, December 13th, the Friday, 2013. I'm Joe Hagman, co-host with my father, Doug Hagman. You're about to hear 3 hours of unbiased and uncensored news and analysis. You're listening to the only news show that is presented to you in 3D. We look beyond the headlines and the bylines to bring you the news behind the news. We broadcast each and every weeknight live 8 to 11 p.m. You can find us on the internet at homelandsecurityus.com. We're also simulcast by the Christians United Broadcasting Network. Tune in to the Hagman and HagmanReport.com. Spell that all out. Thank you for joining us tonight, and thank you for your belief and trust in us as we walk through these minefields of current events together. We are a listener-supported broadcast. I want to thank everybody who has helped us stay on the air through your financial support, through your prayers, and spreading the word about the show. Tonight, I am solo for possibly the first hour. Pastor Paul Begley will be joining us for the second and third hour, and my father will be joining us anytime within the next hour, as he had to take care of our studio dog, our buddy down here, King, the German Shepherd that's used in the picture for our logo. He's going through some rough times with his hips and is having trouble, so he had to take him to the vet and trying to fix some problems and see whatever's going on with him. We got a lot of news to get into tonight that we'll hit while we're waiting for Pastor Paul Begley and my father to get back. And I guess we'll start with, we got the shooting that happened today in Colorado. We're going to get to that. We also have the continuing, the birther controversy renewed by the death of the Hawaii official. I want to hit on some of what I think about the sign interpreter at the Nelson Mandela Memorial, because there are some things there that have been reported that have not been looked at from this angle. Also, we have a lot of information and news on the healthcare law from Sebelius. I want to open up with this clip. I thought this clip was, it was pretty good here. We have a representative from Illinois. His name, I'll find his name here, but he is questioning Secretary Sebelius, and he compares Sebelius to the Republic of Korea when trying to get information from her, and it kind of blows up, and it's a heated exchange. It's only a minute and 15-second clip here, but we're going to start off by playing this.
Of the insurance of the state of Illinois, and he says when you mandate coverage, it's rolled directly on premiums. As the premiums increase, that's paying for these services. You cannot say that these are free of charge.
Again, consumers will not have a copay or deductible. And I think that
will you admit they will have a higher premium?
If no, I do not. I think what a lot of actuaries will tell you is if you have preventive care and prevent a costly hospital stay, cancer.
All right. All right, I got it.
Down the line that cost
we're just going to agree to disagree.
Lowers the premium, doesn't raise it.
It's like talking to the Republic of Korea or something. Last question.
Yeah, Mr.
Chairman,
look,
Mr. Chairman,
you have to let we said it.
I do not have.
We said we were going to let the
Secretary gentleman controls
the
time.
Question.
If the Democrats want to yield.
Yeah, I know, but you have to leave her the opportunity to answer the question.
I do not
all
have
agreed
to allow her.
Yes, you do. We all agreed on that at the beginning.
The gentleman will
let the Secretary answer the question.
The gentleman will suspend. The gentleman will suspend. Give the Secretary time to answer the question.
So a little bit of political fireworks there as Sebelius was asked a question, and I'm not sure exactly what. It could have been on contraception, but she was making a point that, you know, this whatever they were talking about being covered would be free. There would be no deductible or copay or on the spot. payment that would have to be made. And the representative from Illinois was arguing that, well, it's got the money's got to come from somewhere, so it's going to come from premium hikes on some level, whether it is those people who are receiving that kind of care or people, other people. This is how they float the costs around. And, you know, she went on, I'm sure, with her scripted talking points just to read an answer that had nothing to do with the question, as he said in that quote, filibustering the question. And you heard some political theater fireworks there. But interesting exchanges. There's a lot of news on Health and Human Services. Sebelius is all over the place on clips on YouTube and political sites. Another one here, the enrollment numbers are coming out. The New American has an article, How Real Are Health and Human Services Obamacare Enrollment Figures? Now, Sebelius has said on this that the enrollment is short of its goal by 3 million people of the Obamacare goal. Congressman Joe Pitts, the AP reported that a September 5th memo sent to you listed monthly enrollment targets for the exchanges, and in this memo indicated your target enrollment number for the end of December is 3.3 million. Based on Health and Human Services release this morning, your department is more than 3 million off their target number. Isn't that correct? Through the end of November. That is correct, sir, said Sebelius. So they had a goal of 3.3 million people signing up for Obamacare by the end of December. They're over 3 million people short. So only a couple hundred thousand, according to this piece from the Weekly Standard, have signed up for their enrollments or for the Obamacare exchanges. Now, there's another issue here with the website, and I don't think I have this audio clip, but there is no way to pay. And there was another argument with Sebelius and a representative on how people are going to receive coverage if they actually did not pay for it, even though they've signed up. Now, Sebelius has been quoted in the last few days as saying the Obamacare enrollment has worked beautifully. And I'm going to play another short clip here, a minute, 21 seconds. This is just out of this world. Sebelius, the people who have lost their plans, who have been given cancellation notices, she says that they are thrilled because they have all these new choices available to them. This is arrogance at its highest level. Listen to this.
Well, Mr. Waxman, what I find is a lot of people are eager for information. They are confused by what they read and hear. And frankly, the launch didn't help that. But as people understand their options and choices, I find that there is enormous enthusiasm, often huge relief. A lot of individuals who received the notice of a cancellation are unlocked from a policy choice that they did not feel was good for them or their families. They were kind of locked into a plan. And I talk to people every day who now have 40 or 50 choices, a range of marketplace plans, the option to pick and choose. That isn't to say that there aren't some individuals who would have preferred to stay in their plans, which is why I think the president decided on the transition policy in the marketplace.
Oh, yeah, these people are just so happy to be in a position where they have no health care. They have 50 or 60 choices on where to get and how to get health care, probably at a cost, you know, 5 to 10 times higher than the amount they were paying previous to their transition without insurance right now. So they're just thrilled because, you know, they were bogged down and locked in by those pesky insurance companies and insurance coverage. You know, they're just so relieved to have that burden lifted from them. So if anything does happen to them in this transitional phase, is the government going to pick up their health care tab? I don't think so. There is a crisis in this country, many crises in this country. One of them is being created by the Health and Human Services Department, by Obamacare, by this legislation, the Affordable Health Care Act, and we are only seeing the initial phases of this train wreck and not only a train wreck, it is going to bankrupt what little wealth is left in this country and take private money from the private sector and push 1/6 of the economy, which is what they say medical care costs, 1/6 of all the money spent in the U.S. and make it part of the government sector. They have done that. And what are they doing with this money? Well, another news piece here from yesterday, Health and Human Services awards another $58 million for Obamacare navigators. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius' agency announced a grant of $58 million to 1,157 community health centers to allow them to expand their enrollment assistance efforts as more Americans enroll in affordable health insurance coverage. These grants come on top of $150 million previously given to such health centers to support outreach and enrollment activities for Obamacare. Yesterday, before Sebelius testified before Congress about the troubled Obamacare website, healthcare.gov, and the improvements being made to it, from the press release, today's awards build upon the efforts of health centers across the country as uninsured Americans gain health coverage, said Sebelius. The investment means that the health centers can provide expanded assistance for the people and communities nationwide looking for resources to help them understand their insurance options and enroll in affordable health coverage. Remember those same options that all these people who were bogged down by the health care, being locked into health care coverage had. Now, you know, as she said in her own words, as you just heard, you know, these people are thrilled to be in the transition period, looking at 40, 50, 60 different options with their health care insurance, no longer being bogged down by the problem of having health coverage. She goes on to say, having more opportunities for face-to-face enrollment assistance from trusted resources at local health centers means that more people will get the help they need to sign up by the end of their open enrollment period on March 31st, 2014. With these awards, as they said today, the health centers operate more than 9,000 service delivery sites nationwide and serve more than 21 million patients annually. So these healthcare navigators are going to be out in full force. Another $58 million has been put toward the expansion of these health navigators. And we went through the problems with these health navigators. Sebelius herself said that they could be felons. They don't, you know, do background checks or anything efficient like that to make sure that these people coming to your house with sensitive personal information are not criminals. They're just going to hire who they need to hire, and that'll be that. News yesterday we didn't get a chance to hit as Paul McGuire was with us, and if you didn't get a chance to listen to that show, definitely go back and listen to it. A Prophecy of the Future of America is his new book, and we talked a lot yesterday about what is in this book and what Mr. McGuire sees happening in 2014. But we have news that an airstrike or a drone strike killed 15 civilians in Yemen by mistake. 15 people were on their way to a wedding in Yemen, were killed in an airstrike after their party was mistaken for an Al-Qaeda convoy, local security officials said on Thursday. The officials did not identify the plane in the strike in the central Al-Badah province, but tribal and local media sources said it was a drone. The airstrike missed its target and hit a wedding car convoy. 10 people were killed immediately. Another 5 who were injured died after being admitted to the hospital, one security official said. More than 5 other people were injured. The United States has stepped up drone strikes as part of a campaign against Al-Qaeda in the Arabia Peninsula, regarded by Washington as the most active wing of the militant network. Yemen's and Al-Qaeda's main stronghold is among a handful of countries where the United States is acknowledging using drones, although it does not comment on the practice. A Human Rights Watch said in a derailed report in August that U.S. missile strikes, including armed drone attacks, have killed dozens of civilians in Yemen, stabilizing the country, which is also struggling with southern separatists and northern rebels, is an international priority due to fears of disorder in a state that flanks top oil producer Saudi Arabia in major shipping lanes. On Monday, missiles fired from U.S. drone killed at least 3 people traveling in a car in eastern Yemen, and these horrific stories continue to hit through the headlines as these deaths, these collateral damage deaths, as the Pentagon or the executive branch would say, are unfortunate, but, you know, these drone strikes are necessary in their line of thinking. But it is just horrific to think that you can mistake a wedding convoy, kill 15 innocent people in another country, and it only makes for a headline for a day on a few websites. My father's back in the office. He will be joining us here shortly, and we will get an update on King, the studio, and Hagman report dog, the German Shepherd, the beautiful German Shepherd you see in our logo, and how he's doing. But until we do bring him back on, I got another audio clip I want to play, and this will finish up our healthcare news. South Carolina is looking to pass a bill that would eliminate Obamacare in the state, but it would. What they're doing is much more, and Judge Napolitano is a part of this clip, and they're asking him about this law. And it, what this would do would be forcing, if Obamacare was going to be implemented in South Carolina, it would force the federal government to pick up the tab for everything. The state would not put up a penny, and they say that this legislation could be a stepping stool to gut Obamacare throughout with state legislation like this in all 50 states. But listen to this clip.
Top of the hour. South Carolina is on the verge of passing a bill that would end Obamacare in that state.
There are some legal questions surrounding this attempt, but if they get through, other states could well follow suit. Judge Andrew Napolitano is our Fox News senior judicial analyst to explain this. So, Judge,
yes.
Can South Carolina unilaterally decide not to follow a federal law?
Well, basically what South Carolina is offering to do is to instruct employees of the state of South Carolina not to participate in facilitating the law and to prohibit expenditure of public funds on the law. Translate, if the president wants Obamacare in South Carolina, the feds will have to pay for it and the feds will have to establish it. So the question is, can they do that? And the answer is yes. Remember, the original Obamacare ordered the states to establish and pay for their own exchanges. And when the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of Obamacare a year and a half ago, it did invalidate that part, saying the Congress is without authority, quote, to commandeer, closed quote, the states and tell them how to enforce law and tell them how to spend money. So South Carolina can do this.
So according to the Constitution, that state, Columbia State Capitol,
right,
can tell their employees not to accept a federal program.
No, it cannot stop their employees from signing up for Obamacare individually as private persons, but it can stop their employees from using their government jobs to cooperate with the federal government or to enforce its laws.
Hmm.
So if South Carolina does this successfully, then chances are that other Republican-led states will follow suit?
Allison and Bill, if enough states do this, it will gut Obamacare because the federal government does not have the resources or the wherewithal. We know it doesn't have the wherewithal. They can't operate a website, but it doesn't even have the resources to go into each of the individual states if they start refusing. Another state there,
yeah,
the feds could handle it.
What would be critical mass? How many states would need to do that?
Probably, again, Bill, depending upon the population of those states. Once you approach half the population of the country, which, you know, could be a half dozen of the most populous states, not
That's
likely
right.
to be those, Obamacare would be effectively gutted.
So why aren't other Republican-led states considering this?
All right. And there you have the news on that. We'll keep you updated as that legislation and how that seems to turn out. I don't think Obamacare is going anywhere, no matter what states do, no matter what politicians do or pretend or say they're going to do. It's here to stay. And this last piece of news on Obamacare, the Lie of the Year Prize. This is something I never heard of. PolyFact issues a lie of the year. It says here from this RT article, it's probably not the kind of recognition he wanted to receive, but President Barack Obama has been awarded PolyFact's Lie of the Year for 2013. The infamous prize, handed out annually by the fact-checking website PolyFact, was given to Obama because of his statements claiming that Americans would be able to keep their health insurance under the Affordable Health Care Act if they liked their plan. Excuse me. It goes on to quote Obama in what he says, if you like your plan, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, period. And it goes on to list a number of people, some states had that had their coverage canceled, 4 million have had their coverage canceled at this point because their plans did not reach the Affordable Health Care Act's minimum requirements, but Obama denied that such a promise was made, saying he actually meant that plans could be kept only if they hadn't changed since the health care law was passed. And we know all too much of the lies that have been coming out of the executive branch. But winning the lie of the year is President Obama. Getting into the interpreter at the Mandela funeral or memorial, there's an article out of Fox News today that reads as follows. Sign interpreter at Mandela Memorial reportedly once faced murder charge. There's been a lot of talk about this guy. Some say he's a fake sign language interpreter. Some people call them a hoax. They are trying to locate the agency that hired him, and it's been a big conundrum, and people are saying, how could the U.S. Secret Service rely on South American security? And that was what the Secret Service and that they said, is that they relied on the South African security, that they weren't going to, you know, make sure and check everybody who was going to be on the stage. But I have a theory, or this guy has mental health issues. He's had a history of mental health issues. From my research, he is a sign language interpreter. He does have a violent history, though, and he has schizophrenia, from what he has stated. He gave an interview to a Johannesburg TV outlet the day after this happened. Well, this sign language interpreter with a history of schizophrenia, all of a sudden, while doing the sign language for the Nelson Mandela Memorial, starts having an episode. He says he sees angels. And I'm asking the question, was this done on purpose? Was this man with a violent history put on stage when the president was on the stage? And is it possible that he was not placed into an episode, but something was given to him as a trigger to where he was hallucinating, where they thought something violent could happen? With that, I'll bring my dad on. Glad to have you back in the studio.
Well, thank you very much. Am I muted or am I on?
You're loud and clear.
Okay, all right, there we go. Can you hear me? I mean, is it crackling yet or no?
No, you sound very well.
Wow, okay, all right. Well, I was just going to let you go. I mean, you were rocking and rolling. Yeah, what's up with that? Seriously, what is up with that sign language guy?
I asked you, I think, a day or two ago if you thought there was something more to this. And you were working on other things at the time.
Yeah, so. I didn't see really. I mean, I didn't pay attention I didn't pay attention.
It's come out now that this guy has faced a murder charge in the past. Okay, now he has said that he had a history. I watched an interview that he gave the next day. He had a history. Has a history of schizophrenia. He has a violent past.
Well, I watched him do the interpretation of the sign language in a video that was done. I thought it was satire. I really did. I didn't. Was this guy translating anything? Did they?
No, he wasn't. They said it was gibberish. The South African TV news outlet said that he was making signs that amounted to gibberish.
I don't know why this makes me laugh a little bit. I shouldn't laugh, okay? But
hopefully, it's
come
just.
On.
You know, he had an episode.
Somebody asked me if he was stuttering. Okay.
That's funny. But, no, I mean, in all seriousness, you have, I'd say, the world's most protected man in the president coming to Nelson Mandela's, and there's other world leaders here, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't you think and I heard Glenn Beck's take on this a few days back, and he said this guy's a fake.
So wait, have I been in a bubble or in a cocoon? Is this old news or what?
Yeah, this is from the this happened December 10th.
So 3 days ago. All right.
But there's been, you know, little news nuggets coming out about this guy. as people, as I said, some say he is a hoax. Some say he went to school and is actually a sign interpreter. How could he get, you know, to be on stage, to be so close to all these world leaders, and at the same time go through one of these episodes having a history of facing a murder charge, having a violent history, and other charges also he faced. But the top U.S. official said, we're all very upset about the bogus sign language interpreter who just appeared 3 feet from Obama at a memorial ceremony for Mandela. And the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas Greenfield, told reporters in Kenya on Friday that U.S. officials are concerned about the security and how the interpreter could have gotten so close to a number of world leaders. Jantje told AP on Thursday he has been violent in the past and hallucinated during the memorial service as he was gesturing incoherently.
Once again, gesturing incoherently. You know, again, something about this really, it's humorous, and it shouldn't be, I suppose.
Well, listen to this. The Secret Service spokesman, Ed Donovan, said Thursday that vetting for criminal history and other appropriate background checks of the people on stage was the responsibility of the South Africans.
Well, obviously, you're not going to leave the security of our president up to any South African or any government, for that matter. Nor are you going to leave, for example, the security of the dignitaries from the UK to the visiting country. They're going to import, just like Israel, other countries, they import their own security. There's something definitely wrong here. On HomelandSecurityUS.com, we do have a PDF, or it's actually a PDF of a PowerPoint presentation, numerous slides about mind control, about the acoustical non-lethal weapons and devices to people. So, is this guy some type of testing subject? I suppose we have to start thinking in these terms now, because and I got a feeling we're going to be seeing more and more of this. By the way, I just want to make sure you covered this shooting in Colorado, the school shooting in Colorado, Littleton, Colorado.
I did mention it. I did not cover it yet. There has been 3 people wounded, 1 dead. That is the shooter. There's an article that just came out a few minutes ago. New details emerge in a Colorado school shooting. Armed with a shotgun, a student entered high school and opened fire, hitting 2 other students before turning the weapon on himself in the latest incident to confront a nation already debating the effects of repeated episodes of gun violence.
Right.
Today is the eve of the anniversary of Sandy Hook. This happened in Colorado.
Right.
And I talked with Pastor Begley earlier today, and I asked him, you know, why do you think that so many of these shootings are happening in Denver, in Colorado?
We're going to have Pastor Begley. He's coming on, right?
Yeah, because we're on at 9 o'clock.
All right, we're going to have to talk to him about this and other issues. Because I heard from Greg Jackson today. Of course, he sends his thoughts and prayers out to all the Arapaho high school students and families involved in today's shooting here. Well, he lives in Colorado. When he heard about the shootings, he wasn't surprised at all. And all of these shootings, he says, have been at government schools. And somebody asked him earlier today why he thought the shootings were so prevalent at public schools when there really aren't any at the or weren't any a generation or so ago. I mean, at least not with the frequency that they are now. And he responded that it was simple to him. The public schools told God that he's not welcome by increasingly abolishing any remnant of his word, statutes, enduring commandments, prayer, and so on. And therefore, in his opinion, they no longer possess his divine hedge of protection. Now, I mean, that makes sense to me. 5-10 years ago, it probably wouldn't have to me, but I understand that. I think a little bit better now. And it's interesting to see some reactions on forums and God's got nothing to do with it, or the divine protection of God is we are a morally and spiritually bankrupt country. And that's by taking God out of the schools and taking prayers out of the schools. And if it's not the removal of God's divine hand of protection, then certainly it's an artifact or the result of the moral and spiritual bankruptcy of the children and their parents, or at least the children. And I understand, parents are, in theory, and in practice should have control over their children. But look at today's society, and we can see what's going on here, I think. Wow, man, it's crazy. But by the way, a little update on King. You know, he's 140 pounds of just meat. He's a meatball. He's a moose. And I just want to tell you, you know, he got an injection of a muscle relaxant. And, of course, he moved, right? So I'm holding King, and he moved. And when he moves, I move because it's a lot of dog. And, of course, Josh's stepson was there, and he was holding them. He really had them, most of them. I just was holding his hindquarters, actually. And the vet slipped and got me and injected me with the muscle relaxant. So if I sound a little woozy today.
You're not being serious.
No.
Okay.
No. I'm not.
Is he doing okay, though? Is he feeling, looking like he the shot helped at all?
No, you know what? He's got arthritis really bad. You know how that is.
He is a moose, and this dog wants a puppy on the side of a road. I think it was Christmas.
Yeah,
you guys found him
8 years ago this Christmas.
With his belly basically frozen to the road as he was left
on
a little runt, and he is a huge moose, as you said. And we'd take him.
Throw a saddle on him, no.
We'd take him to the field, and he's a, you know, some German shepherds sniff for bombs, some for drugs, some for, or trained for different things. This dog is a baseball expert sniffer of baseballs. So if anybody ever loses a valuable baseball, he could be hired for.
Trust me, he'll sniff that thing out from 5 miles away. Now, the other thing, too, just want to tell you, don't want to sound like this, and yes, I was kidding with the injection. A couple of things. I don't have the email up. I probably should have discussed this, or you should left. I should left you a note here discussing this for.
Yeah,
I don't have the email
it.
Up. You did mention it?
I didn't mention it because
okay.
I didn't know.
I'm going to put the email up here tonight. I there was a couple of things I was trying to figure out earlier today, and I'm. Again, I'm working on a pretty big project in addition to the Fuddy death, which I think is extremely important. But the email will, or the article will go up, the email for the 10 books being given away by Paul McGuire. And I really think this is, I can't think of a better Christmas gift. If you can, you know, if a person could win this, and if you don't win, or if you're, I wouldn't wait. I mean, certainly if I entered in, I'd purchase a book for myself. But Joe, how did we decide yesterday, or folks, did we announce yesterday how long this drawing would last? Because
One week. We'll do it 7 days. We'll have the drawing next.
Well, we have to be careful so we don't. So we have everything done by Christmas. How about the 18th? We'll finalize it on the 18th. Folks,
okay, that's Wednesday.
You?
Yeah.
I'm looking in the chat room right now, and I don't normally look in the chat room, but 18th, folks, what do you think?
What we're doing is similar to the Stan and Holly Dale giveaways of Prudent Places and Dare to Prepare. Paul McGuire has generously offered to give away 10 books, and we're going to set up an email address on our website, and you just send your name and a phone number, optional. And we'll pick the
Robo. Yeah, I know.
We'll pick.
18th, all right, folks. Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, we'll pick the winners randomly, as we did for the other contest, and announce them on the air on Wednesday, the 18th. We have Nathan Leal on that day, but we'll announce the winners at the beginning of the show, and then through the contact information you send, we'll email you back and let you know if you did win, and ask where to ship the. Book two, and Pastor Paul Begley's early.
Okay, wait a second. We're getting some notes here. We're supposed to have sound. Somebody can't hear anything. You guys have okay. All right.
Yeah, sound issues are fine, and there are some people that are coming on and having to play in their default player. Or you
okay.
guys can always go
all
to
right.
Cuban, the Hagman and Hagman Report. Spell it all out. And you will have sound through Justin TV.
Well,
with that,
yeah, if we can run roughshod over Pastor Paul Begley then, as he makes his appearance on tonight, because we've got questions for him that, my goodness.
Well, thankfully he's with us, and he's early. Yeah. Pastor, it's great to have you on our show. I think I have to go back and check, but I think you were one of the first guests on the Hagman & Hagman Report. I think the first one we ever had. And you've been a repeated guest since then, and it's always a pleasure to have you on. We were on your show this Wednesday, and that was fantastic. And it's great to have you back.
Yeah, we've been blessed ever since.
You know what? I'm really honored to be here. And I didn't realize that as a first guest on your guys' show. That is a tremendous honor. And you guys have done nothing but continue to inform the public, keep everybody abreast of the things that's happening, especially here in America and around the world, really. It's an honor to be here. Great to be here, guys.
Well, we really appreciate your time. I know it's on a Friday night, and I know it's you know, nearing Christmas or in that season, time of year, and but certainly we appreciate you coming on. And, of course, folks, in case you don't know, because although there's overlap between the shows, in case you don't know, Pastor Paul Begley's got a fantastic radio program. It's heard all across the world. It's heard Joe. What is
Coming
it?
Apocalypse. It's heard what? Noon to 3 Eastern.
I was looking for the time. Yeah, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Coming Apocalypse, noon to 3 Eastern. Pastor Paul Begley is on Blog Talk Radio, on Livestream, Ustream, Blog TV. Is there any live stream type channel you're not on, Pastor Begley?
You know, I'm not on Ustream. I'm not broadcasting on Ustream right now. That's coming, though. We'll wait till we need to do that. We need more capacity, then we'll probably do that. But right now, that's the only one I'm not using, really. I mean, there's some other ones that are a little bit off, not a lot of traffic, you know. But, we're using about everyone we can.
Well, Pastor, a couple of things. First of all, just dispensing with a couple of news items here. What's up with that hand signaler behind Obama? any thoughts on that? I mean, okay, so you. I'm glad I'm not the only one who started laughing about that.
I mean, obviously, he keeps sending all types of little symbols out, all types of little gestures. I mean, those are instead of buzzwords. He uses buzzwords, by the way. I mean, as well, he'll quote scripture when it's necessary. He'll quote the Quran. He will.
You mean the guy behind? Are we talking about the same person, the guy behind Obama or whoever that was at Mandela's funeral?
Oh, that guy. I'm sorry. Are you serious?
Yeah. Okay. Because I guess he was having like a muscle cramps in his arms or something.
He's having a schizophrenic episode.
He says he's schizophrenic, and he says that he's seen angels entering into the stadium, and he started hallucinating, and that's why he couldn't perform in the, doing the sign language. I've heard different theories on it, but. I just don't know how this guy got past Secret Service. How do you get past all the security? He's within an arm length of the President of the United States.
Yeah, it's come out today that this guy has faced a murder charge in the past, and the spokesperson, Ed Donovan, for the Secret Service, said that they left the criminal history and appropriate other background checks of the people on stage to the responsibility of the South Africans.
It doesn't sound right to me, Pastor. Does it sound right to you?
No, I can tell you right now, the President of the United States, no matter what country he goes into, he'll work with the other nation's security. But his guys, the Secret Service, is ultimately make sure the coast is clear. There's no way they would go to South Africa with all types of Arabic nations and people that are angry at America and George Bush. I mean, you know how many people, there's people want to arrest him. I mean, there's no way. This guy was planted in there and in a way, it might be God's way of saying to Obama, you know what, no matter what you try to do, I can always put a person next to you. Or this is a message from the shadow governments, the New World Order, that's sending Obama a message saying, you know what, we can take you out anytime we want to. You have no idea what you're dealing with.
And that's what I was thinking. This guy with such a violent history that he was once faced a murder charge and other violent episodes, self-admittedly, has schizophrenia, has violent episodes. Is it a coincidence that the day after this Mandela Memorial, he was scheduled to go in for a six-month or a yearly checkup on his condition? And is it a coincidence that he had this episode while this memorial was going on?
This was broadcast, guys, by every television network in the world. We got 91 nations there, kings and Saudi princes, and this is insane. So it's a message. You know, it's a message from the shadow government, from the Bilderberg group, from whoever, letting Obama know that he's got 3 years left. And there's some things he's got to make sure he does. Don't ever doubt that they can take you out. And they're just giving him a little bit of a hint right there how close they can get whenever they want to. I mean, this is insane. It's insane.
Yeah, that is incredible. Wow. All right. I was just wondering if somebody, you know, hearing impaired person in the audience or at home or wherever watching this or would have, you know, use their cell phone, called up the Secret Service and say, you just want to tell you a little something. You know, you see that guy behind Obama there? He's signing.
I think they said, Doug, I really think they said that he only said actually two words. There was only legitimately two words. Everything else he did was gibberish. Weren't even sign languages. I mean, they weren't even, there was two, I forgot what the two words were, but he only actually said two words.
Wow. Manchurian candidate. I don't know. Maybe those are the two words. It's ridiculous. And I don't know why I was focused on that. I just wanted to get your take on it because, and I think you're right. I think there's a message there. Hey, look how close we can get and there's nothing you can do.
Right.
You know, wow.
That's a theory. I mean, that's just a possibility, but I can't see that the United States Secret Service could be that incompetent. I mean, they've shown some incompetency here under the Obama administration, but I just don't see these guys that incompetent that they didn't know that the medical health record of the guy that's going to be standing next to the president. I mean, if there's anybody going to check out, it's the guy that's going to be standing. I mean, bellboys, they know his house number. They know how many kids he's got. I mean, the taxi drivers. This is insane. The guy standing 3 foot from the president of the United States for 20 minutes on world television. Are you serious?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But again, I subscribe to your theory, and I really appreciate that you know, it's a message. And we've had these messages, you know, to Bush and, before to Obama with people crashing the party or crashing the White House parties and get-togethers and such. And
Well, there is one other theory, though, now, and to be honest with you, and it's one that I do have to take a look at, even though this guy has some mental illness, okay? And that is, it is possible he was seeing angels. It's possible that God sent a message, was using him to send a message also to the Obama administration that, hey, no matter how much protection you think you got, I can always put someone next to you.
Wow.
So I've heard that as well. I've heard that, and that's another possibility. Even though the individual, the man, does have some problems, it's God. I mean, God could have been sending a message to the Obama, because the guy said he saw angels. He didn't say he saw demons. He said he saw angels coming in
to the
stadium.
That's amazing. So, you know, that's very possible, as you put it.
And, you know, the media downplays that. I saw that mentioned in the first, you know, in the first reports. Now they just say hallucinations.
They don't want to talk about those angels no more. You know, I think, to be honest with you, either way, Obama was being sent a message. If God was sending him a message, which God can send anybody a message, you can go underneath the Denver airport if you want to into the bunkers, and you're not going to run from God. You can call and cry for the mountains to hide you, and you're not going to get away from the voice of God. So either way, somebody was sending Obama a message, one or the other or both. I don't know.
Absolutely.
By the way, Pastor, before you get started, I know you even raised your hand just now. Can you believe that, Pastor? We're looking at each other. We're in studio. We've got a partition, a small partition, and then we can see each other. He raised his hand to actually ask a question of you, but I vetoed him, okay? I want to say Yvonne from Idaho sent a picture. Folks, did you see this picture of the Colorado shooting today in the school? I mentioned it earlier in the broadcast about the shooting. Here, this picture alone, and I don't know where I don't know where one can find it, but it's a picture of, I'll just describe it here. All of the children from the school are young teenagers from the school. They've got their hands on their heads. They're out on looks like a school track. Okay,
that was one of the first pictures to come out today.
All right. And Yvonne writes from Idaho, and thank you, Yvonne. Since when do they do body searches on every child in school or every kid in school? The photo shows all of them lined up in rows with their hands held high, pretty much like suspects.
I have an answer for that.
Well, it's conditioning, right?
Well, yes, but in a smaller sense, they have these active shooter scenario drills, like you had earthquake drills or fire drills in school before.
Okay.
And this is part of the I was listening to Shepard Smith and then Neil Cavuto on satellite radio today as I was running some errands, and they were playing the live coverage of this, and they were describing this. Every student comes out with their hands up. Every student is then searched by the police. They go back in, and they search every room and go through the whole school. And they implemented the standard operating procedure in any active shooter scenario is how they describe it. And the students know what to do. There was a security official at the school who instantly put this active shooter scenario into effect, locking everybody in the classrooms they were in. It's this big, long process, and it's been implemented through series of drills, through practicing. You know, we have those, what are they called, those actors? Crisis actors.
And we didn't call them back then when we had them. In fact, they took medical students back when I was way back when an emergency medical guy.
Yeah, Pastor. What do you think about this shooting and the way that they have this active shooter standard operating procedure?
And ley lines, Joe. Think about that after Pastor answers. Ley lines.
Well, you know, what's really disturbing is by doing drills that show active shooting scenarios, you're basically sending a message to the students and to the faculty that, you know, this stuff's going to happen. You might as well just get used to it. This is the standard procedure. This is, you know, sort of like tornado drills. You know, here in Indiana, we get tornadoes. So my whole life growing up in school, we had to do 2 to 3 tornado drills a year because, you know, there's a day coming within your 12 years of school, a tornado's going to come within seeing distance. And it did during our lifetime, during our time in school. Instead of coming up with a procedure of how to protect the children, which I would say would be to go ahead and have armed security, armed guards to protect the children, to send a deterrent to anyone who would want to come in and commit a crime like this. Instead of coming up with a way to protect them, it's just, we're going to do another shooting drill, guys. Who's the shooter this time? I don't like it. I just tell you, I just don't like it. It's conditioning behavior that ultimately happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in addition to the drills, though, Pastor, I mean, I this obviously wasn't a drill, but I see that these are awful convenient for the gun control lobbyists, the gun control people. We're just at the press. I mean, to me, gun control or the assault against the Second Amendment and also abortion, those two things, they're on the hot list for, you know, to keep abortion and to export it, and also the gun control to confiscate all of our weapons. Those two issues are perhaps the most threatening to our Constitution. I see this as a, yeah, this school shooting, I see this as a, and
they're going to use every time, any opportunity. They're sort of like Rahm Emanuel said. They're going to use every crisis. Never let a good crisis go to waste. gun control, or what I call trying to violate our Second Amendment rights, is something that actually, I'll be honest with you, when last year, right in the New Year's Eve show I was doing live, I received a prophecy of the Lord, and there were 12 things the Lord specifically gave me, and one of them was that they would try but fail. Exact words. They would try but fail. They will not accomplish taking away our Second Amendment rights, but they will try. And I have never seen a year where every time there's a shooting, you know, and these shootings are always situations where the person, you know, has either got mental illness or they're hearing voices or whatever. It's so convenient. Yet they're able to go in and you know, and commit these heinous crimes. It's either they're getting subliminal messages put into their brain to do this, or government is setting things up, whether it's done that way or it's actual people who have lost, you know, that have lost it and are committing crimes, the government uses every crisis, every opportunity to push gun control. There's no question. It's one of their number one agendas. You're right. And promoting abortion around the globe. Those two are their on the top of their list.
Yeah, and I remember your 12 things that you wrote about that would happen. And it's been a while since we've talked about this. Maybe in the next hour we can go through some of these, because you were very accurate in what you were shown. And it was amazing. I think even maybe halfway through the year, maybe half of those had come
it's
to pass.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, matter of fact, guys, I just got called last week from ITN Television, or International Television News. Is that what they are? They're Channel 4 out of London, England. And I got a phone call from them, and they said, Pastor Begley, we would like to come to your church. We'd like to come to your church, film you speaking. We'd like to interview you. We'd like to come to your house, sit down and interview you. We'd like to film you doing Sunday Night Live. I said, what for? First of all, I was shocked, and they said, well, because we were doing some research on Syria, we come across your YouTube video, we went to your website, and we saw these 12 prophecies, and they're so, this was their words, they were so miraculously accurate that the editor of ITN News says, go out there and interview the guy, let's put it on television. So I was supposed to be interviewed this Sunday, but because of the Nelson Mandela funeral, they called me and said they were going to go there to cover the funeral Sunday, so they've rescheduled for mid-January. But they're going to actually go through these 12. That's what they want to talk about.
Fascinating.
You know what, Pastor? During the break, I'm going to try to find this email. I had mentioned on a show last week, I guess it was, or right after the announcement of Mandela's death, I do feel that there is an issue. For reasons that would take too long for the time we have right now, before the break, I believe that Mandela has been dead for a long time, or for several months. Have you entertained that thought, or have you heard that?
Absolutely. I honestly believe, you remember when President Obama went to South Africa and said he was going to go see Mandela, and then they said, no, he's too sick, it just wouldn't be good, so he just went and met with the family. I think this was in June or July of this year. I believe that Mandela was already dead, and that he couldn't go see him, because if he goes, there are going to be presidential pictures taken. You can't get a picture with him visiting a dead man. So, since when would Obama turn down visiting someone at their bedside, especially Nelson Mandela? The reason I believe he didn't visit him, he was dead. And
okay.
I believe they've had him on ice waiting for this funeral because of the date. And we can talk about that later if you want to, the date of December 16th with this temple.
Okay, so the temple, okay. Yeah, talk to me about the logistics or the motive behind keeping him on ice until now.
Okay. There's a mural at Denver Airport. One of the murals shows people from nations of the world dressed in different cultural, different ethnic background, different races of people. They're all sitting around looking at a dead leopard that's laying on the table. Behind them looks like 9/11 or something. I mean, the world's burning behind them. And on the side, there's a beast with two horns, and then there's eight more horns sticking up, which the Bible talks about a beast with two horns and says that there's going to be a beast will rise with 10 horns total. They got it all on there. Well, the leopard is dead, and all of the countries of the world, all these nationalities are looking at this dead leopard. I got a call from Stephen of Oklahoma, said, Pastor, do you know anything about the dead leopard on the mural? I said, it's just a dead leopard. He goes, no, do you know that when Nelson Mandela, when his funeral is over on Sunday, they're going to remove the flag that's on his casket of South Africa, and they're going to drape his casket in a leopard skin? I said, what? He goes, no, seriously, they are. So I went to my wife, Heidi. I said, Heidi, what is up with this? And she began to do some research, and I guess in South Africa there's the Zulu tribes, they worship their god. They wear leopard skins, especially if you're of importance. And if you're a dignitary and you die, they drape your coffin in a leopard skin, an actual leopard skin. So, and there's even pictures of Nelson Mandela, who went to this tribe in one of their ceremonies and would actually wore some leopard skin. So they are going to put on his casket leopard skin as they take him to be buried. He's going to be buried on December the 16th. The funeral is December 15th, which is the 10th day of mourning, okay? Now, the temple in South Africa that was built, there was a war that took place in South Africa called the Bloody River, and the war took place on December the 16th, teen something. On December the 16th, 1888, planners got together and drew up the plans to build a temple to the sun god. They then built this temple, and it was completed and opened on December 16th, 1949. It is a temple with on the top of the ceiling of the roof is a hole. That hole is there so that exactly every year on December the 16th at 12 noon, the sunlight goes through the ceiling and hits the rotunda floor right in the center. That floor is made of a huge stone that was hewn out of a rock in Egypt and was brought to South Africa and made for the floor. It's called a benben. And what you do on that is, if you have a dignitary, as somebody within that religion, and they want them to receive the immortal power from the sun god Re, you set his coffin on that center of that rotunda and make sure they're there with a leopard skin on it for December 16th, when the sun comes through the hole and shines on the casket, then the sun god will make them immortal. I believe Nelson Mandela's casket will be taken to that temple on Monday, and it will be sitting there waiting for the sun to come through, and then they will go bury him. Now, that's not going to be televised. Nobody's going to. But why else? What is the odds? Why are they putting leopard skin on the coffin? And it's just so convenient. The funeral's the 15th, and they're going to do the burial on the 16th. Why not stop by the temple and do this ceremony before you put him in the grave? I believe he's been dead since June or July. This is a demonic ritual. This is idol worship to the sun god. And the New World Order, if you look in the book of Revelation about the beast that rises, it tells you there's a leopard. I can show you the scripture. You guys get ready to go to a break, so let me grab the scripture, and I will show you how the New World Order, or the beast, is tied to this idol worship of the sun god, and how Nelson Mandela is being immortalized by the world, and the date is perfect to have him at the temple.
Wow. Okay, this is going to be fantastic. On the other side, we are going to hit the ground running. Folks, you're listening to the Well, a fabulous Friday the 13th edition. It's a Friday, December 13th, 2013, of the Hagman and Hagman Report, where it's a very special guest, Pastor Paul Begley. His website, Joe, is... Go ahead.
His
I expect
show,
him a mark.
The Coming Apocalypse. His website is paulbegley.com.
Or is it paulbegleyprophecies.com?
Paulbegleyprophecies.com.
Thank you, Pastor. Sorry about that. Unprepared, as usual. Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly, follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well, just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. FreezeDryGuy.com.
If I were the devil, if I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. Thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me. Our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions, just let those run wild, until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey. Good day.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Folks, welcome back to this very special Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. It is Friday, June, holy cow, it's December 13th, 2013. Yeah, I might have got a little bit of King's anti-anxiety medication or whatever it was. Anyway, our very special guest right now, Paul Begley, Pastor Paul Begley, paulbegleyprophecy.com. That's paulbegleyprophecy.com. Live show every, Monday through Friday. Eastern time, the real time, it's noon to 3 p.m. And, of course, Sunday Night Live show from 7 to 10 Eastern time. You should never miss that. All of his shows, fantastic shows, right on the money. And, of course, YouTube channel, accessible via his website, but definitely visit his website. It's growing by leaps and bounds. I'm looking at the stats on his website. People all over the world are visiting paulbegleyprophecy.com. It's a fantastic site, fantastic program he's got. We're very honored to have him. It's just, by the way, books, music CDs, all sorts of things. You got to help Paul, Pastor Paul, stay on the air, and certainly he's going to donate to help his ministry grow, accessible via his website. I urge everyone to do so if you can, and I do have, I still have in my cooler here, in my office, two very, vacuum-sealed bags of coffee. I have not sent them to Pastor, and he's probably looking every day in his mailbox for that coffee, including none other than Tim Hortons here, which we have in the Northeast. Two things before we get back to Pastor Paul. Number one, folks, I'm working on the Loretta Fuddy, the Hawaiian district or Hawaiian director of health. Now she's central to the birth certificate scandal, the long form birth certificate scandal, the forgery, and she is named in the affidavit filed by Douglas Vogt. We had Douglas Vogt on the air, and of course it was just 4 or 5 days before the plane crash that Doug Vogt had verified her presence on the publicly, widely on the affidavit. So she goes down. And the timing is very unusual. The timing is very suspect. But, folks, I do have on HomelandSecurityUS.com and CanadaFreePress.com. I would urge everyone to go read those articles, CanadaFreePress.com and HomelandSecurityUS.com. Please read the articles. This is part one of a series because this just deals with the reports. And I know that first reports are often wrong. However, I was awake and looking at the news, and I had to save some. Any more, what you have to do is you've got to save the text either by screen capture or some sort of capture program and make sure you have the text that is from news sites. So save that. We've been saving that. And I looked at that, referenced it, looked at all of the different news reports. I'm going to tell you, the news reports are very conflicting well beyond any type of first news reports. Usually they're always wrong. Well beyond that. So
this is the first part. The next part deals with her finances, and I've got to tell you, that's where the really golden nugget is. However, please pass this around. If you read it and like what you read, pass it around to your friends and family, because I do believe there's something about getting ready to happen in that arena, and we need people to – and people, the people that are involved in this know who they are, and look, the best thing to do right now is to – hide in plain sight, tell what you know, and insulate yourself from potential death like Loretta Fuddy. I think we're going to see, if they don't do that, we're going to see additional problems in that arena. So that's the article there. But before the break, we were talking about Nelson Mandela with Pastor Paul Begley, and he was getting the significance of this. And one last thing, and I'm going to turn it over to Pastor Paul. During the break, I had a brief conversation with my intelligence contact. He said, look, that guy, that signing guy, was up there, and Pastor, you'll appreciate this, that guy that was doing the signing was up there for a half a day, well over a half a day, before Obama even got there, doing the same gibberish. And the other thing, if you don't think, and this is what he told me, he says, if you don't think that the Secret Service were ordered to stand down, And I mean, they had to be ordered to stand down. You know, it's you've got to understand what's going on here.
So
it's done for a purpose.
They thought something was going to happen.
No, not at all. But it's to allow that person to it's very possible. The angelic aspect aside, which, you know, I can understand that. But that aside, it's very possible that at certain points, maybe at, we'll say, 19 and a half minutes into a particular conversation or a particular speech, or at we'll say 3:33, or at 7:30, or, you know, whatever number has Illuminati significance, we should pay attention to his actions during those numbers and those times. So, just something to think about. But it was no accident, and you know, being told to stand down. But once again, our very special guest tonight, Pastor Paul Begley, PaulBegleyProphecy.com. That's PaulBegleyProphecy.com. We're going to turn it back to Pastor Paul. Hit the ground running with this Mandela issue. Holy cow.
Wow. You know, I agree as well. And, oh, but I want to give a shout-out to everybody at the Paul Begley Prophecy chat room. I was over there chatting with them during a break, and they said I was a fake. I don't go – you know what it is? It's past my bedtime. I'm not in my chat room in the evenings chatting with everybody, but Blythe and Mike and Christina and 2890 and all you guys, I am Paul Begley. That's the real Paul Begley in there chatting with you. That's not a imposter. So now that you know that, when I chat with you some more, don't worry, it is me. Guys, I'm with you on this thing about the that is a great question, is to go back on the certain numbers, the time of the numbers that he was up there, and what was he doing at those exact times, like, you know, what was his statements, what was his hand signals at the times that he was doing it? Was he told to stand down? Was there an assassination plan that possibly was going to be used? Who knows? But I'm telling you, that guy, that whole situation, there's a whole lot more to it than what meets the eye. And they were sending a message. They were sending a message. Somebody sending a message that we can get to you, Mr. Obama, we can get to you or any other world leader anytime we want to. Now, back on the Nelson Mandela thing.
Yes.
I believe he died in June or July. I do. He was never seen publicly again. Obama was in South Africa and said he was going to meet with him, but then said, no, he's too sick. I don't want to, you know, I'll just go meet with the family. It wouldn't be appropriate. And then he goes home. I don't care what they say. If the man was on his deathbed, Obama idolized Nelson Mandela. He would have went to that bedside. The reason why he didn't is because there would be pictures taken, and you can't go visit a man that's dead. So they come up with, I really believe that he died in June, July, like they think. And they kept him on ice waiting for this appropriate time to set up the 10 days of mourning and the funeral that would end the day before the Sun God ceremony. And it's already been released that they are going to put the leopard skin covering over his casket after the funeral is done And they we may not get to see it. It's been released, though. They've released it in the media. They're going to do it. I believe they're going to put that leopard skin covering on his casket. They're going to leave the area where the funeral is. I mean, where the memorial has been and the funeral there. And then they will take him on. He'll be buried the next day. And between the time that he leaves the funeral and the time that he's buried, I believe his casket will be right in the center of that tundra of that temple made to the sun god. And they will perform this ceremony. And what I really want to know is what the Bible says is going to happen. Here's what the scripture says. In Revelation chapter 13, it says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads," which would be your seven continents of the earth, "and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns," or 10 kings, "and upon his head the name of blasphemy." And I can tell you, if they're worshiping the sun god, it is blasphemy. And look at the next verse, verse 2. "And the beast which I saw was likened to a leopard, which his feet were as the feet of a bear, his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power," not God, the dragon, which always represents Satan, "and his seat and great authority." That's just two verses. It's Revelation chapter 13, 1 and 2. But I want to know what world leaders are still going to be in South Africa at the funeral. Because I believe 10 world leaders will be at the Monday, December the 16th, sun god ceremony with the coffin of Mandela on the rotunda floor surrounded by 10 horns or 10 kings. Who are they? I really want to get the list of who's staying till Sunday.
Okay, go ahead, Joe.
No, Pastor, you're right on the money here. This is definitely something that is in need of further research, and I'm going to work on trying to find out, and we'll pass the information along as soon as I can, who will be in attendance on this Monday.
I think we might be able to get that list. I really do.
Because I really believe that they might not be like, for instance, the British Empire. Let's just say the British Empire.
Right.
Okay. Is Prince Charles going to be there? Is it Tony Blair? Who's going to be there? David Cameron was already there earlier with Obama. But, you know, the British Empire could be represented by, I'm sure the Queen's not going, but it could be Prince Charles, it could be Prince William, it could be Tony Blair. Who's going to represent that kingdom? Who's representing America? Is it Obama, or is he back? Is it someone else? Is it Bill Clinton? Jimmy Carter? There's going to be 10, guys. There's going to be 10. We got to get the list of who is going to be hanging around for the Sunday funeral.
All right. Walk me through this one more time. So we have the 10 leaders from the nations. That represents, according to, your interpretation, biblical prophecy, whatever that represents, why must we have 10 there?
Because in Revelation chapter 13, it says when the beast rises, this beast has 10 horns.
Okay.
And those horns each have a crown, which means they are kingdoms, okay? And there's going to be 10. In this ceremony at the Temple of the Sun God, the ceremony requires 10 people standing in the rotunda.
Okay.
Not 9, not 14.
Wow.
And it's a leopard. It says the beast is a leopard. They're going to have his coffin in a leopard skin.
All right. No, I'm approaching this like I don't know a thing, okay? Like I'm trying to – I'm approaching this like my uncle or like my cousin Tom. All right, so why Mandela of all people and why South Africa and why now?
Okay, Mandela because Mandela represents the overcomer of the apartheid, the overcomer of the last white man supremacy kingdom. South Africa, the last white dominating kingdom, a minority of white ruling over a majority of black. And, you know, the British Empire gave up all of these different kingdoms. In India, they had to cough it up in 1948. I mean, look at the British Empire, how many times they had to surrender that. We already know that America even just elected President Obama, so that's your first black president, which means there's no longer this white dominance. This Nelson Mandela really is the last. He is the legend. He's the man that broke all of the stereotypes, and so he's being immortalized. And South Africa, why there? Because that's where the Temple of the Sun God is. It just so happens it is there. It was built there, and it was built there a long time ago and set up for this December 16th ceremony.
Okay.
Well, I do have a list of people who would be attending the whole all the global leaders that would be attending throughout any of these services. They include Obama, Jimmy Carter, George Bush, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, to Sarkozy, the presidents from Brazil, Canada, Afghanistan, Tunisia, India, German, Lebanese, Chinese, Bangladesh, royalty, the Britain, Prince Charles.
Yeah, we know that, but I guess what we're looking for is the attendees on the 16th.
Right, and I'm still looking for that, but they do say here that there are some places in America, in Kansas City, they have a Monday, December 16th, 6:30 p.m. They're going to, at a Holy Trinity Episcopal Church or Cathedral, they're going to be holding a memorial there on Monday night. There are different places around the U.S. that are doing this at 6:30 Monday evening.
Why? Okay. Can you do something for me? I didn't know this, and that's great research there, Joe. Is why Monday? The funeral Sunday. The funeral is Sunday, the 15th. Why a memorial on the 16th? Why 6:30? What time is 6:30 in America? What time is it in Kansas City at 6:30? What time is it in South Africa?
I will check. It says a memorial service has been planned at 6:30 p.m. Monday, December 16th at the Grace and Holy Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, 13th and Broadway, Kansas City, Missouri. The service will celebrate and honor Mandela and his contributions to humanity. The service will include remarks about Mandela by University of Kansas professor and South African national anthem sung by Kansas City Boys Choir and Kansas City Girls Choir.
Okay, and Pastor, I'm looking at at our clocks here in the studio. In South Africa, it's a seven-hour time difference between here and it's 4:22 a.m. in South Africa right now, so it's 9:22 in the east. So
right.
What does that mean? Okay, so there's a seven-hour difference in time ahead of time. So in other words, it's 4:23 now in South Africa on Saturday morning.
Okay. So 6:30 in the evening is not 12 noon, but it's really strange that they're doing these memorials on Monday, December 16th, when the funeral's Sunday, the 15th. Everything's about December 16th, and that's quite fascinating. And you're going to have, it looks like the Illuminati and the one world government and one world religious movement. You know they're merging. You know it's going to merge. According to the scriptures, that's why you're going to have a false prophet. You have an antichrist, which is your political, economic, and military governmental leader. And then you have the false prophet, who is the spiritual leader of the world. And these two are going to be kissing cousins, if you will. They're going to merge. They're all going to be on the same team. And there's something definitely going on. They're trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes. I tell you, I think that we're getting bits and pieces of it as we go. Different people have been picking up on it. I really want to know who's going to be hanging around for the funeral on the 15th of December. I really would like to find that out. And they may be, because everybody went to the services the other day. 91 nations, I think it was. I mean, anybody that was anybody was there. But somebody's hanging around. We only need 10 of them. Somebody's hanging around.
Interesting. By the way, Pastor, a little note from Vieta. Thank you so much. She writes, "Hi, Doc. I'm hearing you talk about the leopard. Coincidence that this is in the news now." And she references a story out of Looks like California, Southern California, where authorities recovered a huge haul of high-end swag that thieves snagged during a party at an empty mansion. And included in that is a stuffed snow leopard worth $250,000. Now, in her writing this email, she said, you know, wondering, when's the last time you heard about something like this and about a snow leopard, a stuffed snow leopard, you know, and the focus of being on leopards all of a sudden now in the news in various places. Just another dot, perhaps.
Good point. I mean, what's the odds of somebody of that? At this juncture and at this time, right. Unreal.
Well, okay. And you know, another one from Glenn. We get a lot of people, too, who subscribe to Occam's Razor, you know, saying that sometimes the simplest explanation is the best explanation. And I agree with that to a point. But what we're seeing now is well beyond anything normally. He writes that, perhaps it was just a it was what it was with the signer, or perhaps someone was playing a rather large joke with the loony gibberish signer. Well, yeah, I don't think, Glenn, and I'm sure Pastor, I won't speak for you, but as we talked before, somebody had to tell the Secret Service to stand down. You're not going to get within that close to world leaders, and especially the president, without somebody being told to stand down. So,
right.
Wow. Okay.
The chef government, when the Bilderberg group gets together, and when the Bohemian Grove crowd, I mean, when these folks get together, I just like, for instance, my wife was asking me yesterday. She said, "Why is Amazon.com getting drones to deliver a package?" She said, "You know, everybody in the world knows that is the most inefficient way to deliver a package. The cost is cost prohibited. It's insane to think you can use a drone to deliver a package. What is this about?" And I said, "Well, I remember the Bilderberg group. I remember Jeff Bozo. I call him Jeff Bozo, the chairman of Amazon.com. He attended this year. He was at Bilderberg.
Right.
He's got to put in his 2 points. To help bring along the New World Order, help desensitize the public to drones. Let's get them used to it. Domino's is going to deliver pizza with a drone. I'm going to deliver a package. I don't care what it costs. I'm going to do my part to help bring about. This is what I'm saying that he was thinking. He said, I'll do that. If you notice, Facebook, Google, and all these guys, they're all participating in the technology of the New World Order. And they don't care what they have to spend for their part. They just write it off. I don't care. They put it in the R&D department cost. As long as they can do their part to help push along this one world government ideal or New World Order.
You know what, Pastor, I was thinking after we had after he had invited us on your program and we had finished, I was thinking about this, and I just want to say, too, it's great to have you as a guest and kind of in a relaxed sort of environment, kind of a brainstorming different issues. After we got done, I was just wondering, how close do you think we are, Pastor, to the fulfillment, or at least the first stages? Well, that's even a bad way to couch it. We're already into this procession to a new world order, global governance pretty heavily, but how far along are we? And what do you base your answer on?
Are you saying about how far along are we on the rise of the new world order, let's say?
Yes. Okay. Or anything, because we're of like minds about the global governance,
right.
Yeah, where are we in terms of the time?
Okay, if I looked at the scriptures, if I looked at Matthew, I would see, when Jesus said, they asked Jesus, "Could you tell us the signs of thy coming, the end of the world?" He said, "Well, false Christ and false prophets will rise and deceive many." And then he said, "You'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. Be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. The end is not yet." Then he says, "Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and pestilence and earthquakes, divers places, and all of these beginning sorrows." Then he says, you're going to be persecuted, thrown in prison, some of you even put to death. Well, we see Christian genocide going on all over the world now, and it's increasing in many nations as they're being imprisoned and being killed and beheaded and what have you, crucified in Egypt, beheaded in Syria, whatever. So you go on right on down, and you know, just boom, 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 all the way up to the signing of the abomination of desolation. In other words, there has to be a peace agreement signed. That, and in that agreement, it allows Israel to build this third temple so that the Antichrist can actually walk in and reveal himself. He can't reveal himself without the temple, and you can't get the third temple without the agreement. And as you can see in the news, there is an outright, all-out push forcing Israel and forcing the Palestinians to do this deal. And I just read today 6 incentives from the EU. The EU offering 6 incentives, billions of dollars, to both the Israel and the Palestinians if they'll please sign, and all kinds of access to business and political. It's unbelievable. This thing's going to happen. They're going to force one way or the other both sides to come to the table and make it happen, because there is a bigger plan going, a bigger move. And I believe, when it relates to the New World Order, I actually had a dream, and I seen a black train, a big black train, and on the side of it, it said, "The Beast," okay? But the train was built in the dream. The smoke, it was like one of them old trains from back in Civil War, okay, steam engine deal. The steam was coming out the side. It was rolling out the top. This thing was toot toot. It was wanting to go, man. It was itching to go. The problem was the track wasn't completed in front of it. There were men working. I seen men working, laying track. They were laying track, like laying the track for the Great Divide, the Intercontinental Railroad. And the track was long, and there was men working the other way, and it was long, but there was a gap in the middle that hadn't been connected. So this big black train was back there roaring and tooting and blowing its horn and smoke and steam, but it couldn't go. It was like a thoroughbred in the stall just waiting to be let out, but it couldn't go until the track is laid. And I'm telling you right now that the infrastructure of the New World Order is being laid. It's being laid in the currencies. It's being laid in the technologies. It's being laid in the forming of a one world religion. It is being laid in the satanic worship. It is being laid in the wars in the Middle East. It is being laid even in the forcing of this peace agreement. All of these are parts of the track. And what I saw in the dream was the track was not far from being connected. There was a gap in the middle. There wasn't a big gap in the middle. It was not far from being completed. So the track's being laid, and I mean, I'm telling you, I feel like I'm going to see it in my lifetime for sure. I really do.
Wow.
It's going to get completed.
All right. Well, we're seeing the apostasy, the lawlessness here in this country, the impure hearts of men. I mean, as in the days of Noah, and then you've got the DNA corruption of DNA, and I know a lot of people really can't wrap their heads around that, but I believe that's a big part in this numbers game. I don't know how you feel about that, Pastor, but I do. Any thoughts on the DNA corruption of our DNA as it relates to the end?
Oh, my Lord. I mean, I should have just threw that out there. I didn't say it, but the DNA, the DNA manipulation and the seed of the wheat seed, the corn seed, Monsanto, or as my wife says, don't be saying their name now. They're very, they go after people viciously. Don't say their name. So let me call them Ron Santo, okay? You guys got a problem? You don't have a problem with that, do you? I'll just call them Ron Santo.
I'm firing up the word our typewriter here, the old typewriter we have in the office. I'm going to write a letter in your name to Monsanto. Sorry about
that. To Ron Santo, please.
Oh, okay. All right.
He died. Sorry. We should have let him in the Hall of Fame. That's what I still said.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But anyway, yeah, she said, please don't mention their name much. I would say, okay. But they've manipulated the GMOs, they've manipulated the food, and that's part of this DNA manipulation, the food, but also the human DNA with the cloning and the human growth hormone and DNA manipulation, where they now can, if you want to be 7 foot tall, they can actually, if your child's born and you want your child to be 7 foot tall, they can manipulate the DNA, put enough growth hormones, and they can get them close to 7 foot, even if you're 5 foot eight. They can manipulate the DNA. They are doing it. And they can build that can do what used to be done years ago when the giants were in the land. They were the seed of Satan, of course, because they were the seed of the fallen angels that mated with the women of the earth. And those giants had to be defeated by the children of Israel when they went into Canaan. The whole land of Canaan was full of giants, the Amalekites, the Moabites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, and even some of the termites. Everybody was big there. But they had to defeat them one by one. Well, the Lord said, Jesus says, it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man. Not only the wickedness, but even the DNA manipulation with, again, another breed of giants in the land. You're going to see this, guys. You're going to see there's going to be another breed of giants arrive, and it's going to be done, I believe, through this DNA manipulation, that they're going to be able to do this again, create this type of thing again. And Jesus even said this about the wheat. He said, there is tares among the wheat. Now, I know when he said that, everybody knows he was referring to hypocrites among the wheat, being the Christians, and there was tares among them. They look very similar, but they're not real. Well, so he compares it to tares in the wheat. But I can be honest with you, folks, right now, there is tares even in our own wheat field. Reality is our wheat is not even wheat anymore. It's been DNA reconstructed. It's not real. We don't get the vitamins and the nutrition that we used to have. It's literally happening. So I really believe that the DNA manipulation is going to really create some weird stuff in the next 10 years or so. We may see a new race of people, and they will be, you know, call them humanoids, whatever you want to call it. I really believe they're going to be DNA re-engineered scientific people, large people.
You talk about this, I believe. Is it RFID, Mark of the Beast, Zombie Apocalypse?
Zombie Apocalypse is a different book I wrote. It's about demon spirits. It's about all these zombie apocalypse type events where these people are eating people's faces off and all this stuff, and a lot of demonic activity, and how that Jesus actually, these people who did these zombie attacks, what we call the zombie apocalypse, they're every characteristic of these people was actually the characteristics of Legion in the Bible that Jesus cast the legion of demons out of. These people are doing the same thing, running around naked, superhuman strength, eating the flesh of others, breaking chains, escaping the police, quoting scripture, saying they're Christ. These people are doing exact same characteristics as the Legion did in Kadera in Jesus' day. It's just a return of the demons of Legion, and that's why I wrote the book, Coming Apocalypse.
Yeah, and you're so correct. The strange behavior, the increase in these, you know, we saw some cannibal attacks. We saw just, even to the shooting today, the decline of morality in society, the decline taking God out of society. I have an article here from Breitbart. Mount Soledad Cross will be purged from Veterans Memorial. This is a World War II Veterans Memorial, I believe, in San Diego. And a cross that has stood as a centerpiece here has been ruled. It's a 29-foot Latin cross that was erected in 1954, and this is being taken down. Even in 2004, Congress passed the law making this city-owned display a national memorial honoring veterans of the United States Armed Forces. It's been ruled to be taken down. We see the students who have been expelled for not wearing their RFID or not wanting to wear an RFID badge. We see all this increase in technology. And this is what when I think of it, Jesus said, you know, as in the days of Noah, so too shall it be in the days prior to the second coming of the Lord. And what did we have in the days of Noah? We had technology, I'm sure, much more advanced than we could ever imagine how it was back then. But that was the result of the fallen angels. People were engaged in living their life to the point where they were corrupted so much. We haven't seen, I mean, imagine the planning and the time that it took to get a society back to where it was, and to do it so subtly and at the same time fulfilling Bible prophecy. We're seeing this all happen right before our eyes. We are in the times like it was when the flood of Noah happened.
Exactly. And this Obamacare machine, this solo health machine that is sitting in Walmart stores and in Sam's Club stores. And I did a video on that where a guy actually in Virginia went into one of the Walmarts where it was first put in, and he signed up for Obamacare, and it asked him his name, his address, his Social Security number, his zip code, his cell phone number, his email address, everything. And it even said, "Welcome to the Affordable Health Care Act machine, also known as Obamacare. Please, you have to sign up. It is the law. And if you don't sign up, you will be fined, penalized, taxed hundreds of dollars and going up each year. So please start to enter all this information." Okay. And then there's a scanner on the right side. But the scanner has no purpose. He stuck his right hand in there, and it would light up like, well, this is where you put the microchip in your right hand anyway, so maybe that's what it's for. And nowhere on the machine did it ever explain what the right hand scanner was for. And later he went up to the front, and he asked the pharmacist. And they said, no, there's nothing wrong with the machine. The machine works fine. People, he goes, no, I know there's nothing wrong with the machine. I wonder what the scanner's for. What's that scanner for? He goes, you know what? Let me get a hold of somebody at the manufacturer. No one could ever tell. He said, is it for an insurance card? No. Is it for, does it read prescription drugs codes on the bottle? No. What's it for? It's right where the right-hand scan would be. It's sort of like they're just desensitizing us. Get used to the microchip ideal. Get used to the scanners. Get used to the system. And my wife Heidi works for the state of Indiana. She actually works in a veterans home hospital, and her job is to help the veterans get their benefits, make sure they get their care, But to do that, she has to know how to file the proper paperwork with the federal government, and she has to get that information from the Obamacare bill. So every day she has to read the Obamacare bill to find out the best way to, the proper way to pay, to get the stuff paid for the care. And she said, Paul, every day they add new pages to the bill. Every Monday when she comes into work, she said there's 12, 14 new pages of how to implement. So when Nancy Pelosi said we have to pass the bill to see what's in it, that's exactly what they're doing. They're writing, they passed the bill, and now we've got to find out what's in it. It changes daily. And in it, she told me there's phases that the government will implement upon the public. And each year there's different phases. The death panels you see are coming in 2015. 2013 was supposed to be the small business and individual mandates. 2014 was supposed to be the corporate mandates. And some of these are being pushed back, plus some people are getting exemptions. And then the microchip, which was supposed to have been implemented by March of this year, was pushed back now, been rewritten and pushed back to December of 2017. So I've asked her to come on and be a guest on my show, and she said she will. Actually, Sunday night, the 22nd of December, she will be my guest, and we're going to interview her and ask her to tell us what are the phases of Obamacare. What are they exactly? And she's going to break it down for us. So I would encourage people to be listening to that program.
Absolutely. No, that's so important. Something I'm definitely going to tune into as I love – well, I don't love doing this, but researching the government PDFs and publications that they put out there and all the different ways they explain this chip or medical countermeasure or however they label it. But they are doing this for the children, for the public health, you know, to save the global public health, as they say, to save the children. They know better than you. I played Sibelius earlier saying people were thrilled that they lost their health insurance coverage because now they have so many options.
Yeah,
well,
they're just so thrilled.
Yep, they're thrilled because, you know, yesterday they were locked down and bogged down by the complication of having insurance. Today they have options instead.
Yeah, the options are if they get sick right now, they're not covered.
Exactly.
But, well, can anybody tell us what the, you know, in insurance, you have ceilings, you have, you can max out your insurance coverage. You get leukemia, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, how much coverage do I have? Well, I'm covered. Yeah, I'm covered. Really? Let's see how much you got. 200,000? You're dead. Who's next?
You know, Pastor, and this is something I want to thank a listener that sent this in. There was I think I mentioned this briefly on your show on Wednesday. If not, it was some other time, perhaps on our show. But the February 2009 TARP stimulus bill, in fact, I think it was on your show, it provided the infrastructure for the Affordable Health Care Act, which that bill, 500 pages into the bill, is where the cost analysis or the cost, well, the death panels, I guess there's no other way to put it, death panels exist. So what happens is your personal care physician, and I've seen mine now walking around with this, like an iPad type thing, and everything goes into this. I mean, he doesn't carry a pen anymore. It's just, you know, type stuff into this thing. Well, apparently that's going to be connected to some sort of committee or this bureaucratic board somewhere, or Borg, whatever. You'll have a code, a numerical code for your diagnosis, and then that gets sent to this committee along with your age, and they will decide if you are to be maintained through medication or if you are the lucky one where you've got your years left, enough years left to justify their investment, monetary investment into you, into your problem. So you could have cancer in theory and be 62 years old, we'll say, and not have enough years left to recoup the investment that they're going to put into you. So now, but that brings me to a question I have for you, and I'm going to make a statement, a very assertive statement here on the Hagman and Hagman Report. I'm going to tell everyone right now, and if any member of the federal government is listening, you could take this to the bank. I will not participate in any manner, in any way, in any type, form with Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act. I will not sign up. I will not file, or if whatever is required of me on the, you know, tax forms, I am not going to file, nor am I going to assess myself any type of liability for this. So, but my question:
what if a navigator comes and convinces you otherwise?
I hope they've got sneakers on. Okay.
Yeah, now, they may have full coverage. They may need full coverage.
Yeah, they're going to need a Kevlar covering, let's just say that. To the feds listening, that was an indication of my intent. No, but Pastor, how can you or anyone else, any other pastor, urge anyone to enroll in Obamacare? That's a loaded question. Can you, as a pastor, urge anyone to, in good conscience, in good religious faith, urge anyone to participate in a system like this?
I can't. I just can't because it's part of the the track of the beast. It's part of the infrastructure, and I know it is. I do know that most pastors and many pastors do not have a clue what we're talking about, and I'm not being rude or obnoxious here or anyway. I just know they don't know. They're clueless to this, and most of them think that we've got plenty of time. It's going to be a different system. The mark of the beast is a spiritual thing. There's not actually a physical thing you have to do. This note, folks, when you go to Walmart, it ain't a spiritual thing how you get to buy the groceries. You don't walk in and say, I feel the food coming to the cart. I'm just spiritual today. It don't work that way. You have to have cash. You have to have a debit card. You can't just go in and feel real spiritual. It don't feed anybody, okay? So there is a mark, and without it, you can't buy or sell. Or in other words, you cannot participate in the world economic system. And that doesn't just mean food. It means your health insurance, your health care. It means transportation. It will mean you can't get an apartment. You can't buy a house. You can't even work a job. There is going to be the haves and the have-nots. There's going to be those that are going to be involved with the elitist system, and there's those who are not. And I'm like you. I'm not going to get chipped. I'm not going to even love to put a chip in my dog. I'm just right. not going to get a chip, okay? I'm not saying that if you did get something that you've taken the mark of the beast. I'm not saying that. I believe that this chip technology is actually the technology that will be used, though. And we're not far out there. I mean, the track's being laid. This is part of laying the track, is what I'm saying. And in good conscience, I wouldn't encourage anyone to do it.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at prophecy, as you alluded to in Revelations, where it explains the system that we will live in. And I do believe that most Christians will have to face this choice. There will be so many people. This will be implemented slowly through VAs and pediatrics and different government assistance programs, Medicaid, and then once a percentage of the population has this, they'll make it mandatory, and then it will begin to be implemented to the point where you'll have people that live next to each other. Some can go shopping and some can't, because those
yes.
that can't, they will be outcast. And at the
yes.
same time all this happens, you'll have it'll be after some type of calamity, and it'll make the people who follow Jesus, as the scriptures say, hated for his name's sake. And I can see the way that this will unfold, where we literally, you will starve to death. You will be killed by your brother for not having the chip and being caught with a loaf of bread, something along these lines. And
I can
just see how this could roll
that's
out.
That's part of how it's going to work, and that's where Christian. Let me share something with you right now. Just today, Russia Today report: Russian lawmakers are seeking to ban the U.S. dollar, predicting a 2017 collapse. Russia lawmakers on the floor of the Russian parliament were seeking to ban the use of the U.S. dollar and predict the collapse in the year 2017. Now, 2017 is also the year that the microchip, class 2 implantable registry device, you know all the legal information or the terminology they use. That's the same year they're going to implement that. So already you're beginning to see the nations of the world starting to push the dollar away, because the collapse is coming. It will collapse. And once it does, that will affect the markets of the world. And once that happens, they need an alternative. They need a new currency. They need a way to make it work. And they're going to implement some type of new economic system, a cashless society. Bitcoin is just a precursor. It's just a test. This is only a test of your FEMA emergency broadcasting system. I mean, Bitcoin is the test. It works. Cashless society can work. Now they have to get everybody on the same page. And you got to create chaos. You got to create a reason that people have to give up the dollar. It's because they're going to rule the dollar dead. And Russia is already beginning the process by saying no more dollar for us.
India, They have moved their whole population, and 1.2 billion, I believe, into a cashless society. This happened a few years ago or a year back now. This is the future. You know, we look at covered news in not too near past about Louisiana outlawing garage sales because undocumented cash transactions. We can see how they have set this up, how they have first created this currency, this manipulation of money, and turned it into paper dollars instead of actual gold and silver, which has been what money has been historically. Now they are saying, you know, we see all the massive debt this whole world is in. We could never repay it back to the banksters, the New World Order people who got us in this mess. Now they're going to need a way to document what every person's worth is to the state. It's implementing their New World Order through a selection of different systems from Marxism and communism to Nazism, and they're taking the best policies and procedures of these other systems and using them to implement their one world utopian Lucifer controlled New World Order.
Exactly. And there will be basically two classes of people: those that are in, that are on the team, those who have accepted the plan, and those that are the resistors. And the resistors will be Christian, people who are part of the freedom fighters, you know. So, and you're going to start seeing the struggle in advance. I'm telling you now, they're laying the tracks. I'm telling you, the resisting and the pushing back is already starting. You can see it when these kids in school are told they have to have an RFID badge or they can't eat school lunch. I mean, I'll put it this way. First, you have to have the technology to implement the mark. That has been established. We have the technology now. It can be done. But next, you have to have the mentality. So that's what you're going to see now, is they're going to work on desensitizing the general public of the world to get used to this new technologies. So we got the technologies. Then you got to have the mentality, and then it becomes a reality. That's the three phases. I say we're already in phase two, changing the mentality of the general public. And you're going to see in these next three years, unbelievable advancement of desensitizing the world to this new world order system.
Absolutely. I mean, think about how are they going to keep track and know of all the fatalities in a tornado? I mean, all the ways that they can push this chip, and also the ID way, by saying, you know, if your children was kidnapped, if you chip them like you do your pets, you can know where they are at all times. If there's a disaster that happens, we can find out how these pathogens or biological agents are spreading, and the chip will identify them and report back to us. All these
Always for your good. It's always for you. This is to help you. We're trying to do this for you. No, you're not. You're trying to control us. This is all about control. This is all about mandatory. You will do this.
Like the Patriot Act. It's for your security.
Yeah.
This is how it's all been done. And
Pastor, do you think the immigration reform is tied to this at all? Or, you know, go ahead.
Yes, I mean, they have, you know, immigration reform has many bedfellows. First of all, if you have immigration reform, it's an automatic about 12 million new voters that would be 90% Democrat. Okay, so obviously the Democrat Party is going to do everything they know in their power to create amnesty for about 11 or 12 million illegal visitors that are here working. And I ain't got nothing against the people that have come to America trying to make a living, coming out of different countries because they just got to find a better way. I don't blame people for doing anything they can to get ahead, to make a difference, to feed their kids. but that's certainly one reason it wants to be done, because it swings it's like picking up a ton of voters. I mean, it's like picking up like two states of voters, and most of them, they pretty well know which side they'll go on. Another reason they're going to use it is because they'll say, hey, because of this, We need to identify people, you know. So let's start chipping people so we know who is a real citizen and who isn't. This is for your benefit. So,
Okay.
Again,
I can see how that would frame up like that. Wow. Okay. Well, Pastor, this is amazing. Now I've got numerous questions from listeners, new listeners, even, and I want to say hello to Andy B. for listening from the United Kingdom. God bless you. Thank you very much. And also Karen in Rome, want to say hello to you once again. Sandy R. listening live now out of Alaska. So wants to say that she loves your radio program, loves your ministry, Pastor Paul, and very happy that you're aboard, as Margo from Oklahoma, or where'd it go? I was looking at it right here. My goodness, I see it all the time. Margo says hello to you. Sorry, Margo, for messing up here on your place. By the way, before we take a break, I want to mention to you, Pastor Prince Charles, and thank you, TJ, for this. Prince Charles is going to attend the funeral on behalf of the UK.
Wow.
So that's interesting. This from Sandy A., as an aside here, or as a supplemental issue, eBay, there is a piece of currency from, well, it's a South African, it's a 200 Rand note, a Federal Reserve note, South African Reserve Bank, 200 Rand. On the front, it would appear, a picture of Mandela. And, Pastor, guess what's on the back of this 200 Rand note?
Don't tell me a leopard. Anything but a leopard.
Oh, man. Ding, ding, ding. It's a leopard.
You've got to be kidding me, right? Are you serious?
I'm dead serious, yes.
Yep. A leopard? You've got to be kidding me. That's insane.
And, folks, you can follow along with us in our surprise as well. My goodness, you can't make this stuff up. Folks, we're at the top of the hour, and Pastor is so generous with his time. He's going to be staying with us here. And I've got to tell you, Pastor Paul Begley has got a fantastic website, and I love the design of your website, by the way. It's very easy to navigate. It's paulbegleyprophecy.com, and from there you can get to his YouTube channel, which is Paul Begley 34, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's actually it, yes.
Okay, all right. I had it written down, and Joe took my note card.
Yeah, paulbegleyprophecy.com, Paul Begley 34 on YouTube. And we'll be right back after these short messages. Stay with us. We'll be back for hour number 3 with Pastor Paul Begley on this Friday, the 13th of December. Just 12 days left till Christmas. Coming fast.
You better wake up fast and listen to this, America. The Obama campaign has launched attack squads disguised as truth teams dedicated to intimidating and silencing all political dissent carried over the internet that criticizes the Marxist Obama. Truth squads specifically focused on covering up Obama's endless trail of lies, corruption, and subversion, and using the Gestapo power of our own government to police and censor the internet and shut down websites that dare to carry the real truth about Obama's Marxist coup. Remember the names of these Gestapo-style agencies at work right there in your neighborhood: KeepingHisWord.com, KeepingGOPHonest.com, and AttackWatch.com. KGB, SS, and Gestapo-style police state gangster organizations at work to silence the important voices of patriot dissent, some of which have already been shut down by Obama's orders. Adolf Hitler would have been proud. We're the 21st century Tea Party Patriots.
Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Hagman here for American Survival Wholesale, our sponsors. The entire show, actually, tonight is being brought to you on behalf of or by AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. I want to thank them for their wonderful support of our program, for their, more importantly, folks, time is getting short. You know, if you want to avoid the Mark of the Beast system, and I think we've got ways to do it. And we have to kind of think ahead of the game a little bit and think a few steps ahead. Well, even if that's not your purpose, or perhaps you want to give an ultimate gift to someone you love for Christmas, think about long-term storage food, such as the Linden Supply 7-day package. For Hagman and Hagman listeners, very special deal. You can get this Linden Farms 7-day emergency supply. It's freeze dried. It comes in a 3.7 gallon bucket, very stackable, and it's 2,000 calories a day for 7 days. It'll get you 7 days. The food is good, by the way. I've tasted this food. I like it, and you know that's important in a crisis. But $90. But for Hagman and Hagman listeners, it's $80. Because why? Well, they give you a $10 credit for your next purchase. Folks, I've got, I'm going to tell you flat out, okay, I've got four people who I purchase for outside of my wife, and we're on a budget. We're on a tight budget. This is the pack I'm sending or I'm giving to three of those four individuals. It's that good. But check them out. There are a number of products at AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. You can, just so many survival items, outdoor gear, you name it, it's there. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Don't wait. Don't wait another day. Christmas is coming, and of course, time is getting short. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Tell them Doug and Joe Hagman sent you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour of this Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. It's been a great week. We are in our final hour with Pastor Paul Begley from PaulBegleyProphecy.com, also his YouTube channel, PaulBegley34, and every day he uploads great YouTube videos on current events of the day, things that are going on. Definitely go to his channel, subscribe there. Also, author of several books, RFID, Mark of the Beast, Zombie Apocalypse, The Hosea Prophecy, and so many more. Go to Paul Begley
Jerusalem
Prophecy.
Jihad. Jerusalem, yeah. Jihad. Holy cow.
I want to play a quick clip for you, Pastor Begley. I don't know if you've heard this before. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. But this is from Joe Biden when he was a senator in 2007 talking to Justice Roberts.
Our constitutional journey did not stop then, and it must not stop now, Judge. And we'll be faced with equally consequential decisions in the 21st century. Can a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement? There's actual discussion about that. You will rule on that, mark my words, before your tenure is over. Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior? You will rule on that. And, Judge, I need to know whether you will be a justice who believes that the constitutional journey must continue to speak to these consequential decisions, or that we've gone far enough in protecting against government intrusion into our autonomy, into the most personal decisions we make. Judge, that's why this is a critical moment. There are elected officials in this government, such as Mr. DeLay, a fine, honorable, patriotic man, and others, who have been unsuccessful of implementing their agenda in the elected branches. So they've now poured their energies, as the left would if it were different, they've now poured their energies and resources into trying to change the court's view of the Constitution. And now they have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
All right, that was Joe Biden at Justice Roberts' confirmation hearing back from 2007. Have you heard that before, Pastor Paul?
Yeah, I actually heard part of it. I heard the part about ruling on the microchip. I did not hear what you just played. I thought that was fascinating. It's amazing how a senator from Connecticut is looking at the soon-to-be Supreme Court justice and saying, you will rule on the microchip. Mark, notice the word, mark mm-hmm. my words. And then what happened? He does get confirmed. He is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Biden becomes the vice president. The Obamacare bill gets shoved down the American public's throat. It winds up in a constitutionality at the Supreme Court. The vote is 4-4, and the Bush-appointed Roberts, you're sure he's going to vote. It's not constitutionally correct. But no, he does rule. It was his final decision. It's insane. It's a new world order coming down.
Oh, man.
You know, you're the second person that pointed out the previous positions of these gentlemen and the future positions that they found themselves in, especially Chief Justice Roberts being the deciding vote. And I don't know if it was Tom Horn or who the guest was, Augusto Perez, but somebody said it was prophetic at the time that sound clip was actually made because of what happened, what you just explained happened.
Right. I just got, during the break, guys, Rhonda of Mississippi just gave me a link to who is showing up, all the dignitaries that are going to be at the funeral of Nelson Mandela on Sunday, December the 15th.
Oh, great.
There is only one person representing the United States of America. I'll give you guys a guess.
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton.
Nope.
Oh, wait. Okay, hold on.
Three guesses. Five
Joe Biden.
No.
My last one is Valerie Jarrett.
No.
All right, I'll take one more shot at this.
Okay.
Okay.
He's not currently, I'll give you a hint, he's not currently holding any elected office.
George Bush.
No. Reverend Jesse Jackson.
You know what, I would not have guessed that. I don't know why, but I would not have guessed that. Okay.
Also,
what does that tell you, Pastor?
Well, again, here's a Protestant minister who's embracing. He's going to be there to embrace. Now, I know they're going to say that he's doing it from a racial standpoint because the Rainbow Coalition, Reverend Jesse Jackson, you know, the connection with Dr. Martin Luther King, and so they're going to say the reason he's going is, you know, the apartheid thing, and that's why he's representing America, and I can see that angle, but it's more than that. This isn't about apartheid. When we're talking Nelson Mandela, there's a whole lot more involved now. This has moved beyond apartheid. This has moved into another level of paganistic worship. When you're talking about sun god worship, when you're talking about the leopard, we're going to another level here, and people are going to be participating. I was looking at the list. Yes, Prince Charles. Prince Charles will be representing the United Kingdom. There's going to be the president of Mali, the president of Tanzania, the prime minister of St. Vincent, the prime minister of Ethiopia, the vice president of Zambia, the vice president of Iran, Mr. Mohammed Shirhamadari. I'm not going to say that twice. Vice President of Nicaragua. Several former prime ministers of Norway and France and Zambia and Nigeria. Tanzania. But there's not a lot of kingdoms. Mostly Ethiopia's got some people there. But the European Union is being represented by Mr. Roland van der Geer, head of the EU. He is going to represent the European Union. So the European Union is going to be present. The African Union Commission will be there. Several African nations, the United States of America, France, Norway, the United Kingdom with Prince Charles, Iran really is the only Middle Eastern country that's going to be there. So it's not a lot. I mean, you can throw all the, if you put all the African nations in there, you're just coming down to a few kingdoms, really. Really, and I have to sit down and really analyze this. But wow, who is the 10 going to be there? Man, you can almost, it's not that many people. It's not that many people. And it's not that many different kingdoms represented here. So you can almost figure out who could be the 10 that will be.
Wow.
Great research.
Rhonda of Mississippi. We call her Tupelo Peach.
Wow.
Pat, interesting. Switching gears here, I know you've been to Israel several times. There is a historic snowstorm, they say. Power outage in Jerusalem. Thousands.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Rare ferocity. Thousands stranded drivers had to be rescued. Major power outages, road closures. They say they're battling a storm of rare ferocity. This from the Jerusalem mayor, Nir Barkat, released a statement saying the capital received over 37 centimeters of snow with deeper snowfall in other areas. And the weather forecaster on the public radio described the storm as historic, as Jerusalem temperatures already dropped 2 degrees Celsius and are expected to drop below freezing. Snow is anticipated and to continue to fall through Saturday.
This is unbelievable. First of all, it's the biggest snowstorm since 1953, and if it keeps snowing through Saturday, it will be the biggest snowstorm in the history of Israel. The other thing is, it's right now, it's 19.7 inches of snow. Guys, that is a ton of snow. Are you serious? Israel is hot.
That's like a Tuesday here.
I mean, I was in Israel in February. It was 90 degrees one year. It's hot there. You don't get snow, and you definitely don't get 19.7 inches. And here's another thing, guys. It's snowing in Cairo, Egypt.
Yep.
For the first time in 100 years. And, oh, by the way, guess who arrived in Israel today, unannounced, the same day this historical blizzard hit? For his 11th trip, John F. Kerry, Secretary of State, forcing. He's meeting with these guys, still forcing, trying to twist the arm of the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Benjamin Netanyahu. What's fascinating about this? When he went to see Mohamed Morsi in Egypt, the day he arrived, locusts invaded Egypt. I ain't making this up. I mean,
not inviting him into my Christmas party.
I'm just saying, he's not coming over for Christmas Eve. He's not coming over for New Year's. I'm not. Heidi, cancel that invitation.
Holy cow! Seriously,
there's something biblical going on here, guys. First of all, what is God saying here? Is He saying, I got to wipe the place clean as white as snow? I got to do something to cover the sins? Snow is always looked at as a covering, as a cleansing, pure as the wind-driven snow. You know, I mean, the same day that he shows up and he's there, I mean, they're forcing. Let me tell you what they're doing. They released this peace agreement. Right now, also with John Kerry is retired General John Allen. Okay?
Right.
They have come up with a plan to divide the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and one-tenth of Jerusalem, of the east side, just a little sliver of Jerusalem, and that would make up this new Palestinian state. And to create the security, there would be a buffer zone along the border between the two states, and it would be managed by the United States military. And Israeli soldiers will be allowed to stand on the Palestinian side of the border, and Palestinian soldiers will be allowed to stand on the Israeli side of the border. Now, that's the initial plan. They gave that to Benjamin Netanyahu last Friday, and they went to Ramallah this afternoon to try to soften and to get Abbas to maybe buy into this. Now, he said there's never going to be – I will never allow one Jewish soldier to stand on our land. So I think what happened is they'll take away that, but it will be the Americans who will become the buffer. And here's why that's so important. If the United Nations ambassador, Samantha Power, who was appointed by President Obama here recently, in a 2002 interview, Joe, and you can probably find it on YouTube, I've seen it, she's being interviewed by a guy named Dick Cavett or somebody like that, and she says that the only way you can have peace in the Middle East is to have a two-state solution in which U.S. soldiers have to be sent to Israel to force and mandate the security against the Israelis to keep peace for the Palestinians and to stop from atrocities being committed by the Israelis. So, wow, that's exactly what the plan is, and they're trying to force this upon both nations.
What do you see as Netanyahu's response if they – come to some sort of agreement, as you're speaking of? I don't see him letting this happen.
Here's why they got him in a corner. The Iranian six world power deal, he feels betrayed. Because
the P5 plus one you're talking about, right?
Right, the P5 plus one, which all is right. America, Russia, China, the United Kingdom, France, and Germany. P5 plus one. Permanent five members of the United Nations Security Council plus Germany. Those six world powers struck a deal with Iran and basically said, Iran, go ahead. You can still enrich uranium. You know, just don't make any nukes. We're going to free up $7 billion of sanctions against you. And Benjamin, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. He's furious. He knows it's a bad deal. He don't trust Iran. Are you crazy? And now he can't trust the Americans or the British or the Germans or the French. So basically he can't trust the EU or the Russians or the Chinese. Nobody's got his back. So they've got him in a stranglehold. Now what they're going to do is say to him, look, you do this deal with the Palestinians. We'll give you a ton of cash. They'll get a ton of cash. Matter of fact, we'll go back in and we'll put the hammer on Iran. We'll shut them down. We won't let them have a nuclear weapon. You'll get your peace and safety. But if you don't do this deal, Mr. Netanyahu, we can't guarantee what Iran's going to do. It's the stepping stone. It's the hammer. They're going to offer him, you know, in negotiations, you offer an olive branch, but you carry a hammer in the other hand. And that's what they've done. They've set up the hammer, and now they've got him in a corner where he's got to do it. If he doesn't do it, he has no protection. He can't trust anyone. So, you know, this is the only reason he will. It isn't because he wants to. Matter of fact, in the Bible, it's like they are told not to do this. It will bring problems. It will bring cursings. They're not to divide the covenant land, but they're going to. And the reason we know they're going to is because of Daniel 9:27, when it says they will have a covenant with many, and it will bring about the abomination of desolation. So we know it's coming. And the only way you're going to get Netanyahu to agree to it is because he figures it's the lesser of two evils.
So if I hear you correctly, and I think I do, what you're saying is, yes, regardless, this plan, this partitioning plan, will become a reality.
And I really think it will happen during the four blood moon cycle that starts. One of the prophecies, you know, you talked about the 12 prophecies the Lord gave me. The Lord literally gave me the prophecy that they would begin the process. Let me just go down and look at it. Because actually, I didn't even know I was going to do it that night. I was in the Spirit of the Lord, and I literally just started flowing out of me things that the Lord said would happen in 2013. And one of them was this: the seven-year peace agreement will be started in the year 2013 with a 50% chance of signing it during 2013. But it looks like it won't get signed in 2013, but it has a strong possibility of being signed in 2014 or 2015, and which would ironically be the four blood moons starting on Passover of 2014. And then the next blood moon is Tabernacles, the Feast of the Tabernacles, 2014. And then Passover, 2015. And then Tabernacles, 2015. Now, we haven't had a four blood moon landing on four Jewish high feast days since 1967, which was a six-day war, and 1949, right after Israel became a nation. And before that, 1492-93, when Israel was expelled from Spain. This will only be the fourth four blood moon cycle hitting on feast days in over 500 years. And each time it's happened, milestones as it relates to the nation of Israel have happened. And that's why I really feel that this agreement will be done during that four blood moon cycle, somewhere in that process.
Now, for listeners who are not following or haven't followed this before, this whole process, Pastor, and we have had other like Pastor Langdon and others, Tom Horn, who talk about a number of things that kind of,
right,
you know, kind of circumvent this. But from your perspective, then, what does the Bible tell us then? Once this agreement is signed, and you said this starts a seven-year peace agreement.
Seven-year peace agreement.
Okay.
Is
this what I think it is?
Well, it's not the seven-year tribulation period. It's the beginning of the seven-year peace agreement. Now, it's going to be called peace and safety, which is exactly what they're calling it, peace and security and prosperity. And Israel wants peace, and Palestine wants power. They want to have they want their own state, and of course they want all the billions that's going to go with it. They're each going to receive, but it's going to be a promise of peace and security. The Bible says that this will be a covenant with many. Now the scripture says that it'll go along real good for 3.5 years. Everybody, but the scripture says, but when they say peace and safety, then cometh sudden destruction. There will be war. Now, it could be the Psalms 83 war where all these nations come against Israel. Or it could be the Zechariah 14 war where Israel is invaded and loses half of Jerusalem for a short time. And looks like they're almost ready to go down. There will definitely be a conflict during this 3.5 years. Also, what's going to come out of this, without question, will be Israel's going to say, all right, we don't want to sign this deal. I don't want to sign this deal. I don't want to do this deal. But if I can build the temple, at least Netanyahu can go back to the Jewish people and say, guys, I know how you feel about this deal, but listen, we're going to get to build the temple. We're going to have peace and security, and we're going to rebuild the temple. And that's going to be the selling point. That's going to be that's the linchpin. That's what's going to make it happen. And so they will rebuild the temple. And so really what you're going to see is at some point we're going to see this covenant signed and the temple built.
Wow.
And so there could be some process. They could sign this deal and then the temple could get built. And then after the temple's built, there could be a period of time of peace and tranquility before at some point the Antichrist, according to Apostle Paul in Thessalonians, has to walk into that temple. It says walks into the temple of God before the worshipers of God and say that he is God. This Antichrist will do this. When exactly, we don't know. I mean, different people have different theories, but certainly if the covenant is signed and the temple is built, you're on the verge of seeing, and I believe this, the black train in my dream, it can't come down the track till the track is built. These are some of the missing rails. These are some of the missing spikes that have to be finished, is the signing of this agreement and the building of this temple. and all of the rest of the infrastructure of the system, the technologies that are being laid right now in front of us. And we're seeing a lot of that right here in America with the implementation of these executive orders signed by the President of the United States, the stripping away of our Constitution, the technology advancements that are the immoral breakdown of this country. We're bankrupt morally more than anything. I mean, the one world currency being formulated, all of these are parts of the rail, and they're coming fast. I mean, they're coming fast, guys.
Absolutely, they are. And it's staggering to think about this. Okay. The building of the temple, is this a prerequisite for, well, I mean, I fully understand what happens, but is there something about the rebuilding of the temple, Joe, were you going to say?
Well, no, people argue that, you know, the temple is our bodies now, and that there doesn't have to be a third temple actually built. We know that they are planning to build one. Israel is planning to build one. There's much more work been done on this than we could even imagine.
Yeah, and Pastor, you are in Israel. So what's the building of the rebuilding of the third temple all about?
Well, a couple of things that you can know. There's what's called the Temple Institute, where literally millions of dollars have been donated by Jewish businessmen from all over the world. And not only just Jewish businessmen, a lot of Christians as well. And Israel has already prefab. When I was there, I was asking some of the Hasidic Jews, I said, is it true that you guys have really, do you really have a prefabbed construction of the temple already? They said, oh, yes. We have it in walls. They're already pre-built. And the one guy said, listen, when Solomon built the temple, the Bible says never a hammer rang within the temple. In other words, there was never the sound of a hammer. That it was built so that the cedar beams they just fit, okay? They were, you know.
Kind of like interlocking almost.
Yeah, interlocking. Okay. There was never a hammer. They pre-built these walls, and they would bring them, and then they would just interlock them into the cedar. He said, we've done the same thing. We've rebuilt this temple in sections so that when we bring it to put it up, it will just fit. There will not be a hammer used on the internal, on the inside. Now, there will be hammers used on the outside to fasten it, but not inside. We're going to redo it like Solomon did it. We have all of the golden furniture. It's all preserved. We have 12 red heifers in the stalls waited for sacrifice. And a red heifer, under the law, you had to have a red heifer that couldn't have one blemish. It couldn't have one spot on it. It had to be perfectly red heifer. He said, they're able to do it through DNA. Through DNA. Again, here's the technology again. Wow. They used the DNA technology and created all the heifers perfectly red. So they've got 12 of them. At all times, they keep 12 heifers in the stall. They have everything they need, and they have the blueprints. It will be a smaller, modified temple so that it will fit on the Temple Mount and not interrupt the Muslims. The Muslims will be allowed to leave their Dome of the Rock there as well. But there won't be no outer court. They said, we'll just leave the outer court, which would have been in the original temple. You had an outer court. They said, we won't have that. We'll leave that open so that visitors, especially the Christian visitors, the Gentiles, they can come and they can walk around up there between the two houses of worship, and they can have their time. So, which is exactly what the Bible says in Revelation chapter 11. When the Lord showed John to draw the blueprints of the temple, he said, but don't draw the outer court. That's left for the Gentiles. I mean, it says that. Okay? Yes. I mean, and these guys are Jews. These are Hasidic Jews. They don't believe Revelation. Okay?
Wow. Okay.
But they're doing it. Because, oh, and by the way, Benjamin Netanyahu, when his brother, who was a war hero in the 1973 Yom Kippur War, the Day of Atonement War, one day war. He died at his funeral when he died.
At Entebbe, I thought. Didn't he die in the raid on Entebbe?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Young Benjamin Netanyahu is sitting there, of course, at the funeral. There's an old rabbi prophet that was at the funeral. He stood up and walked over to Benjamin Netanyahu and said, "Thus saith the Lord, you shall be prime minister not once but twice and rebuild the temple of the Lord."
Ooh.
Now, Benjamin does become prime minister in the 1990s, and now he's back, not once but twice, and he has the blueprints of the temple of the Lord. And you can't write this script. This is something beyond me, you, and the listening audience. We're not talking about a Stephen King novel here. This isn't Hollywood. This is a biblical, something biblical is going on. I'll say it again. Something totally biblical is going on with the signs of the second coming of Christ, and it's coming together piece by piece.
My goodness. Folks, this is really incredible to listen to.
Yes, it is, and it there's an importance that we need to, as I said, this week, our perception of things, the way we perceive things, needs to change. We need to be grateful for what we have. We need to be in a constant state of attributes that the Lord calls us to be in. You know, to be meek, to be patient, to be kind and loving. We need to be any moment. Ready
need
for
to be
a
paying
change.
Attention to the signs. Yeah. I mean, what Pastor Begley is talking about, and by the way, Pastor Begley is at the forefront of, I believe, biblical prophecy that I can understand. You know, I mean, God bless Tom Horn. He can come on, and man, sometimes it's like it's right over my head. I have to listen to it 3 or 4 times, but Pastor Paul Begley puts it into words that we all can understand, and I want to thank you for that, Pastor. I do have 3 emails, and I don't know what prompted this series of all 3 from listeners listening live to this program. Roland R. from New South Wales, Australia, Jennifer L. from Idaho, and Cheryl M. from Chicago, all asking the same question, so I don't know if there's perhaps a chat or something going on somewhere. But all 3 listeners want to know, since you're talking about Israel, you're talking about the temple, you're talking about prophecy, do you have any, and this is a summary of all 3, the same questions. Do you have any thoughts on the location of the Ark of the Covenant, or if the Ark of the Covenant is even relevant to future biblical prophetic events?
Great question, and the Ark of the Covenant, you know, Jesus really replaced it. When he went to the cross, that became the mercy seat. And the reason I can say that is when he died, the Bible says that there was an earthquake, there was thunder and lightning, and the Bible says that the veil in the temple tore in half, or rent in twain is the old English word, but it really means it tore in half, and the people could look right into the Holy of Holies. Now, you have to realize, before Christ died, if any time a person other than the high priest was to try to walk into the Holy of Holies, they would fall dead. But on the day of his death, the temple veil tore in half from top to bottom, and everyone could look right in and see the Ark of the Covenant, and they did not die. And also, you have to understand, the veil was 4 foot thick of wool. A team of oxen, 16 on either side with ropes, could not pull it apart. There's no way it can tear in half unless a supernatural move of God tore it in half, which God did. And God did it to prove that this is no longer the Holy of Holies. But now the Holy of Holies, the Savior, is the Lamb. This is the new mercy seat. It's now at Calvary. But having said that, the Ark of the Covenant is still very precious to the Jewish people. And what would a temple be without the Ark of the Covenant? To them, it's critical that they have it. When I was in Israel, I again asked these Hasidic Jews that were sitting around in the hotel lobby, because it was the Feast of the Passover. I was in Israel this past May, during the Feast of Pentecost. And so there was a lot of Jewish people staying at the same hotel I was. And so these guys are sitting around the lobby, you know, and they got the Hasidic, you know, the Hasidic Jews sit there and they twirl their sideburns and they got the funny hats, you know. So I sit down around them and I said, "Guys, look, I'm a Protestant." I said, "Got a question though. And we're talking about Jerusalem and how I love the city and what have you. And I said, the Ark of the Covenant, in all reality, is it just a legend that you guys may know where it's at? Or is it a pipe dream? Do you really think you know? And the one guy, they all turned and looked at the senior rabbi. None of the other guys would speak. They all turned and looked at him as if to say, we're not going to say a word. This guy here will answer this question. He looked at me with a smirk and said, wouldn't you want to know? What's that? Is that a yes?
Wow.
Wouldn't you want to know?
Very now, interesting.
Now, Perry Stone has been to Israel many times, and he does a lot of his programming there. And he has met numerous hours with different rabbis, and he feels, he hints heavily that it is there, that it's buried in the tunnels, secret tunnel passageways, been hid, being preserved till the building of the third temple, and that they know exactly where it's at, they know, and that once the temple's built, they will unveil and bring it back. I don't know what to say, but we'll have to wait and see. But his little gleam in his eye and smirk let me feel that they know right where it's at.
Wow. And hopefully that answers the questions of the emailers. From the Ark of the Covenant to the Shroud of Turin to the Spear of Destiny, all these, I don't even want to say artifacts, all these, really religious symbols.
Relics. Religious relics.
Yes.
Right.
There's so many stories behind, even the Noah's Ark. All of these things seem to have been covered up, whether they're found or not found, whether they're, the myth or tradition, that line or myth or fact is always blurred when it's given or fed to the masses, the public, through the TV channels, through the, and even through a lot of religious networks. They don't, it's like there's a veil between what it says in the Bible and what is given to the people on anything from actual doctrinal information to things that, aren't addressed in the Bible, to things that are addressed in the Bible. And it's very frustrating. And a lot of the issues we're talking about are very important and interesting. But as we see, as we move into 2014, as we see that these blood moons seasons are starting, and Pastor, are you aware, is there going to be an eclipse during these blood moons?
Yes, there is. There's going to be a total solar eclipse between there's two blood moons and then there's two more. But in between these four blood moons, there is going to be a total solar eclipse. The sun will be darkened. It's going to be a full solar eclipse. And it happens on a Jewish day. I wish I had my notes in front of me. I can't remember which day, but it actually happens on another important day, and which kind of goes along with what the Bible says in the book of Joel when it says that the moon will turn to blood and the sun will be darkened in those days. So I heard John Hagee talk about this. He wrote a book called Four Blood Moons, Something's About to Happen. I'm writing my next book after Jerusalem Jihad is Four Blood Moons and the Peace Agreement. Is my next book, actually, after Jerusalem Jihad, which comes out on my birthday later this month. But in the book of Joel, and I'll just refresh my memory by just looking real quick, the prophet Joel is talking about the end of days, and in the last days he would pour out his spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and daughters would prophesy. And your old men would dream dreams, young men will see visions upon my handmaidens. Servants, I'll pour out my spirit, thus saith the Lord. And I'm looking for it right now, so one second. But now here it is. And it says also, then it says, in Joel 2:28, and then it says, and in those days the sun shall be darkened and the moon shall turn to blood. Well, John Hagee feels it doesn't mean you know, it doesn't mean that on one day they're just the moon will turn blood red and the sun will get dark, and but it means during those days, in other words, during that period of time that we're going to go, and he believes that could very well be the four blood moon with the solar eclipse. He don't know if it is, but it could be. Certainly, it would be very prophetic. We're having this tetra, they call it, of the four blood moons. And what are the odds of the blood moons on feast days, guys?
Yeah, if you have those handy, yeah. I'd like to hear them.
Well,
go ahead, sir.
No. Is that what you meant? The floor, yeah, floor. The four blood moons, you had mentioned that they fall on the feast days. The four Jewish feast days, and I think you mentioned before. If you did, I apologize. If you want to repeat those again, I think it's important for people to get this.
Passover, Feast of Tabernacles,
right.
Passover, and Feast of Tabernacles, 2014 and 2015.
That's exactly right. On the very day, and that's extremely impossible. I mean, it's the next thing to absolutely impossible. Other than if you believe that the Creator of all things has an intelligent design. And that the sky, that there shall be, and Jesus said there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars and distress of nations with perplexity and the sea and the waves roaring. In other words, you will see these signs in the heavens and they will match the signs on the earth. Here's what it says in Joel chapter 2, whenever he begins to prophesy. Joel says, and it shall come to pass. In verse 28, this is Joel 2:28. It shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. Your sons and daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams. Your young men shall see visions. And also upon the servants and handmaids I pour out my spirit, the say of my spirit. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon into blood. Before the great and terrible day of the Lord shall come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Okay? For shall be delivered, for in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance. Now remember, when this is being prophesied, and then Israel gets, the Jews get taken out of Israel, and Israel is Jerusalem is taken over 14 times by the Muslims and by the Crusaders and by the Ottoman Empire and the Roman Empire and the Babylonian Empire. I mean, what is the odds of it getting back reestablished in a time such as this? I mean, it really is.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
You know, Pastor, we're in the Jewish year right now is 5774, according to the Hebrew calendar. And I've often heard the 6,000 year calendar discussed and referenced for the Jewish year or for the end of days or end of the days or end of time, essentially. So we're looking, and I also know too that there's a controversy, that the calendar could be off by as many, it's a significant amount, which
by about 230 some years, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Which would put you real close to 6,000.
Exactly. Right. And I was just curious as to whether, I mean, it just, everything seems to be lining up. And if you're listening, regardless of folks, where you're listening to this program, whatever part of the world you're in, we're talking about events that are going to be world changing. Wow. So, okay. So, man. Yeah.
So let's think about this, Doug. You know, the Bible says, in the book of Daniel, when Daniel has visions, a day is considered a year. All through the book of Daniel, when he made reference to a day, it was always a year. Okay? That's why when he says 7 days, he meant 7 years. But when other prophets, when they spoke of time, they said a day with the Lord is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is a day. Now, we know God speaks about his 7 days of creation. He worked all the way through 6 days, and he rested on the seventh. If the thousand-year time frame is appropriate, and if the calendar's off by a couple hundred years, give or take. We don't know exact. And that's kind of the, I think God did that on purpose, because that way we wouldn't know exactly which year we were in exactly. And we know we're up right around that 6,000th year. And he's done a lot of work. Does that mean the seventh year God rested? Is that the millennial reign, the seven-year reign, the thousand-year reign of Christ? I mean, any way you shake this thing up, we're getting, and when you look at all the signs and the moral decay of the world, the technology advancement, the idol worship, the falling away of the of people from God, and all of the signs in the heavens and the earth and the earthquakes and all of the things going on, you certainly would lead you to believe that we're in a last day scenario. We're winding this thing down. It's coming fast. And it would behoove people to really take an accountability of their life and ask themselves where they stand in the big picture with God.
And there it is, folks. That's so important for everyone to understand. Excuse me. This is what it's all about, because eternity is going to be a long time. That's to quote my daughter. I just want to. I got an email here from Christy from Iowa. God bless you, Christy. She writes this, Pastor. She said, she says, Doug and Joe, your show tonight is so fantastic. Everything that Pastor Begley is talking about is so spot on, and I believe that we are in biblical times and things are happening at light speed. And she also reaffirms the fact that she's not going to take part of anything concerning microchips or any such control mechanism. And she closes her email out by saying, God bless Pastor Begley and, of course, us and all our families. And folks, I'll say this, God bless our extended family of listeners. And we have many, and we care about you all. And I just want to say that it's been such an honor to have you tonight, Pastor Begley. I know you've got to be exhausted. And I'm sure Heidi, your wife, is probably thank her on our behalf for allowing you to be on the show. That's really
absolutely. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I absolutely thank her for allowing you to have this time. And Pastor, I want to ask you. I know you've kept track of this in the past. How many salvations have you had this year so far?
We do keep that. Just to give us a gauge of what's going on. We had 75 people yesterday, which was amazing, and we had 20 today during our live broadcast. And coming into yesterday, we had 2,625. So that would put 2,720, give or take. And what that means is that's just the people we know. That's not counting the people that are out there giving their life to the Lord that we never hear about. And we're not doing that to be boastful in any way. We're doing that to give people an ideal of the harvest of folks that are coming to Christ, which helps people understand the impact that the gospel is truly making. And we love every one of these. We believe every soul counts. And we know God's got it fully understood and got every name written down in heaven. But we want people to know that they're important. And when they ask to be saved and we pray with them, we want them to know that they count. And we don't ever forget about them. We pray for every soul and want to help them. It's been amazing.
Amen. Amen to that. And I wish we had, more churches, more pastors, more people, asking for salvation, helping bring people to know the Lord and people willing to know the Lord. It's so anti-Christian. There was a time I even remember where the sentiment wasn't really pro or anti-Christian. It was just accepted. Now you see this hatred of, Christianity. You see this vile, evil, nasty. Everything's coming out in the open. The wars, I believe that there are wars in the heavens going on now, and we are seeing this manifest on the earth in these, spiritual sways or shifts. A lot of people felt, the last election day, we went through one of these shifts. I was definitely one of them. And it just seems like it's getting worse. The believers feel oppressed. They feel beaten down, worn out, because the separation or gap from those who would listen or would sit down and talk or debate. Now you can't do that anymore. It turns into an instant argument, or, you know, it is just getting worse and worse, this separation. Have you seen this separation? Have you felt this rift, you know, continuing to increase?
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. There's truly, you know, it used to be when I was a child growing up, if you weren't a Christian, there was good moral people in the community. Let's say they weren't ready to make a commitment to Christ. But man, they respected the pastor. They respected the Christian folks. You know, they didn't want to swear and talk nasty around people they knew that believed in God. And you know, people shook hands with folks, and their handshake was their word. But now, it's so bad that if they find out you are a Christian, they will deliberately ostracize you, not let you be in that group. Try to figure out ways to sabotage you on the job. They don't care what they say in front of you. They'll say any ungodly thing. It's like the days of Sodom or the days of Noah, you know. And there's definitely a shift. There's definitely a change. And I'm with you, Joe. Since the election, there's been another level of the shift. The media, MSNBC, I'm going to be honest with you. 10 years ago, Chris Matthews, actually, you could have watched him, and he would kind of try to give you both sides of the story. You know where he stood, but he was at least fair. I mean, these guys now, there's no fairness to it. They're shoving a one lean forward, outright atheistic view, and they hate, it's almost like they hate the Christians. They hate the Word of God. They hate the Jews. They're just pushing everybody in a corner.
Yeah, and that is the sentiment we see, and I'd urge people to pray for all those out there. When I pray that all souls that can still be saved find a way to be saved, that the Lord works in their life in a miraculous way and save them. And people, we need to be praying hard in these days. We need to be reading the word of the Lord. We need to be growing closer to Him and aligning ourselves with His will, not our own, if we want to be a part of His family after we're gone from this place. You know, there is no death. Our spirit lives forever, and we're going to end up on one side or the other, and sadly, few make it to the right side. But we have to do what we can to make sure we are the people that end up on that right side.
Absolutely. And Pastor, all I can say is your programming, your website, I mean, it's growing by leaps and bounds. And I'm just so proud to be able to call you a friend and a brother and a fellow warrior in this information war that we find ourselves in. And I just want to say thank you so much. I mean, you're a beacon of light. And I mean that. You know, I've had the opportunity to listen to your show and many times. Paul Begley 34 on YouTube, and of course your website, paulbegleyprophecy.com. My friend, thank you so very much. And I know you're dog tired. You know, we all are just experiencing this fatigue. I feel I've heard from a lot of people saying, I've never been so tired in all my life, and that goes double, I think, for the people in the trenches, the warriors. And of which you are one, certainly a very formidable warrior. But just want to say thank you so much for sharing your time tonight with us. You're just a tremendous man. One of these days, Joe and I are going to stop by and have take you and your wife out to lunch or something.
Oh, that would be great. I would love to do that. We would have a great time. And it's an honor, guys, to be on your show. I mean,
well,
it is an honor. I look forward to it. Because I know you guys, your heart's in the right place. You do a tremendous job. And I always encourage people to go listen to the Hagman Report every evening because of the insightfulness and the honesty and the true, you know, the true love you have for the people and for the Lord. And it radiates through to the listeners. They know it. They enjoy it. They know you're real. And that's something you can't imitate when somebody's real.
No, and I'll tell you, you know, we pray all the time that we never let people down. I mean, we don't want ever to let anyone down. And Boy, you know, being a watchman is an important job, and we just want to say thank you for being such a great watchman, and thank you for your work of salvation with others. But
Absolutely.
Pastor, yeah, we're out of time. God bless you, my friend.
God bless you guys, and God bless all the listeners out there. They're awesome. You know, they hang in there with us. You guys are with us day and night. They're amazing people.
Absolutely.
The Coming Apocalypse, 12 yep. to 3 p.m. Eastern time every day. Yes, every single day. You can find Paul Begley Show and Paul Begley 34 on YouTube, paulbegleyprophecy.com. Check out his books, some fascinating books he has. Looking forward to the next one, Pastor. It's been a blessing. Thank you so much, and you guys have a great weekend.
Good night. Until Monday. Good night.